three motions, essentially. Well, we had one, but we had split the motion into three parts. So we'll start back on the first of the three. Deirdre.
Thank you. Hopefully we had a break over lunch and now everything's crystal clear. What we discussed over lunch is that there may not be a need. There was a little confusion about what these alternatives actually say and what they would do different compared to how the agency has dealt with this issue in other limited entry programs. And I think when we got through the discussion over lunch anyway, as best described, is that there is an alternative in the document that we were talking about on page 24. The intent, the council's intent of that alternative was clear in terms of basically the text in italics, which would allow the ability for two individuals to potentially get permits from the same hull if they qualified under the criteria under different time periods. What is not crystal clear in the language right now is that it wouldn't matter if the vessel was only had general category permit on it or if it had a general category and other limited entry permits as well. So the idea over lunch was by being silent, it probably addresses both of those situations. However, it would be smart for the council to add a sentence to this section that would clarify something like this type of alternative applies to vessels that sold a vessel with only open access general category permits and or a vessel with that may have had other limited access permits as well. Specifically, the current policy used under the consistency amendment would not apply under this alternative. An individual that retained history would be permitted to qualify for a permit and fish under general category on a different vessel if, in fact, they qualify under the criteria. So the point to keep the record clear is that this alternative would enable both situations if the vessel, in fact, had only the open access general category permit or it also had other limited entry permits, which is where we got a little tied up before. Does that help?
Everyone clear on that? Which part, John? Which part? From the first word to the end. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I confess I don't know if there's some language that is that's appropriate. I think we ought to just put it up on the board and make sure that everyone understands that, and then we can move on. And so poor Deidre, if she's got that written down.
Fair enough.
God bless you.
I'll hand that to Karen, and I guess we can make it an official motion unless you want me to just add it by consensus or something like that.
I'll turn to Dave Simpson. Did you have that level of discussion on this point at the committee?
I don't think we saw the problem.
Okay.
So, no.
I guess just to fill the open air, the point really being that while we may not have been this specific in our discussions, the point was that we didn't want to be restrictive to just vessels that had only an open access permit or vessels that may have had other limited entry permits as well. The point was that this measure would cover both those situations and not just one of them.
Everybody clear on that? Sally?
So we can end up with more permits, but no double counting of history.
Right.
So we can end up with twice as many permits. I mean, not really, I understand that, but you could end up, if you had one permit, you could end up with two, but you're not double counting history.
Any other questions? Okay. So this is the first part of a three-part.
Just tell them you're going to treat this as a perfected.
Right. Okay. Anyone in the audience? Steve?
Mr. Chairman, members of the Council, Stephen Ouellette for the Barnegat Light General Category Scallopers. Initially, I have to say that I agreed with the concept of allowing people to retain histories, whether or not they had other limited access permits, and I think it makes sense to some extent. The only concern that I have is that we are now looking, this was when we were looking at a five-year look-back. We're looking at a 10-year look-back period now, 10 or 11 years. If you do not place some type of recent history criteria in connection with this, there is a potential that a boat that has changed hands three or four times through the course of this time frame, where people have transferred it, for example, with limited access permits, the parties to those transactions actually could retroactively execute documents saying, well, we intended to keep the general category scallop history. And each one of those individuals, in theory, could now apply for a limited access general category scallop permit. And again, you know, it's those damn lawyers. You know, they find loopholes everywhere, and they're pretty slippery at it. The potential exists, again, if you don't, with 11 years looking back, every one of those transfers, in theory, yes, it does not double count history, but it allows, since you're looking at a one-year qualification period, it allows anybody who held that boat to come back in and say, well, I should qualify for a general category scallop permit. So in fairness, the agency has always indicated you could retain history. There's no reason that two people shouldn't be able to qualify based on fishing conducted at different times so you don't get overlap and you keep them separated. But again, my concern is we're going to have people popping up who sold boats in 93, 94, 95 with scallop history who now appear with documents saying they retain that general category scallop history. The subsequent owner himself qualifies, and you just end up with a morass of additional permits. So I would caution you that you may want to put some type of recent history criteria. Perhaps that if you sold it, retained the history, you had to have actually replaced the vessel and actually have fished the vessel in the general category scallop fishery since you sold the first one, because the criteria is you can retain history for purposes of a replacement vessel, and maybe you have to prove that if, you know, within some time period they have to have actually replaced the vessel and continue to participate in the general category fishery. But I think if you leave this open with an 11-year qualification period, you're asking for trouble. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Anyone else? Okay, back to the council. Anything further from the council? John Nelson.
Well, following up on Steve's point, do we concur with that, and that we should have? Well, maybe it's an either or. We have it exactly as it is now, and then, or B, the council may have a history-based concept in there in which you have to prove that you had actually fished in the general category. I don't know. Is that something that staff could be tasked to work out for the public document and get public comment on it?
Well, if the council wants to do that, I wonder, right? This has to be completed on Friday?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly we can handle things qualitatively for now and get back to it, but I think at best it would have to be a little more specific than, you know, some sort of year or something that they would have been active in 05 or year of the control, something else that we could go on.
Well, it seems to me, Mr. Chairman, in order to get some input from the public, that an A or B situation would be appropriate. And I know it's arbitrary right now to have decided what years or whatnot, but I think if it was worded to the point that the council may consider that fishing needed to occur, you know, at some point during that time frame. I mean, it is general, but at least the public would say, well, okay, yeah, we like that or we don't like that. I'm not advocating it, but I hear some legal advice that might be a loophole that we might want to address. So if maybe you already have consensus on it, Mr. Chairman, you might just ask.
To that point. Okay. Well, I think we're going to need to incorporate it into a motion at some point. Either get through this one and then offer up another one, or we don't. So anything else on the motion on the board? Nope. Okay, all those in favor, please raise your hand. Opposed? Three. Motion carries 9-3. Pat, did you abstain? One abstention. Okay. John, if you wanted to offer up a plan B, or we can go to point two of this tri-split motion. Point two. Dave, what was the second part of this motion?
Yeah, allow permit stacking up to 60,000 pounds or 150 trips.
Seems pretty clear. Any comments, any questions from the council? Anyone in the audience? Back to the council. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Opposed? Abstentions? One abstention. Motion carries 14-0. One abstention. And the third part?
And the third part is establish a maximum of 1-5% ownership in the total limited access, of total limited access in the general category. And that was, I think, right?
Another revelation over lunch was this debate about permits versus access language, and we did come up with another hopeful solution of how to address that term. And the idea was to, instead of using the word permits or using the word access, to consider using the term 1-5% of total general category allocation. That way, however it's allocated in whatever form, it's clear that way, understanding that permits may have different levels of access to the fishery. I should probably point out, too, there's been some question during development of this of why the range 1 to 5%, and I just wanted to point out that the document now contains a range because it's not clear how many vessels will ultimately qualify and which strategy the council will go with, meaning more vessels or less vessels. So that range is there for now, but when this document comes back in June, the council will have to define that range more specifically.
Okay, so you've switched access to allocation. That seems to be consistent with the intent of the committee and the discussion that the committee had, so it's a perfection. Anyone on the council? At this point, Dave Gaethel.
Is this going to be enforceable? That was one of the reasons I split this question. I had doubts about how you would actually do this.
Anyone want to speak to the enforceability of this, Pat?
To some extent. We have a provision like this now in the limited access scallop fishery. And to the extent that we're able to accurately track ownership, we can accurately track it. But that, of course, can be difficult. So we monitor it, but I wouldn't tell you that that I feel 100% comfortable that we have a fail-safe way of knowing who owns what.
Anyone else to this point? Jim Odlin.
Yeah, I have the same comment. I think these type of things are unenforceable. You can put a permit in a 10-year-old kid's name and a company in a 10-year-old's name, and you can just keep right on moving. So it seems to me that it's just a wasted effort to make everybody feel good about something that they can't control. So I will oppose this motion.
Anyone else? Gene Martin.
Yeah, but the way we do it, you would have to commit fraud to do it. And this would stop an egregious accumulation of allocation. I mean, at some point, I think it would become obvious to the rest of the members of the other participants in the fishery if somebody has 20% control of, or even 10% control of the fishery. I think that would become obvious, and somebody could drop a dime, and it would be pretty easy once you have identified somebody that's committing fraud to go back and then try to uncover it. Because right now we're requiring limited access vessels to list if they have any kind of ownership or other interest in any way whatsoever in any other vessel. So unless you commit fraud, then we should be keeping a handle on it. But I admit that it's not extremely difficult to try to hide the ball, but it does require an illegal act.
Anyone else? Anyone in the audience? Back to the council. Ready for the question? All those in favor, please raise your hand. Thirteen opposed. One abstentions. One abstention. The motion carries 13-1-1. We're on a roll, Dave.
Ready to slow down? Okay. Dave and I talked about before moving on to actually we're getting through the limited entry section, and the fourth and fifth bullet are the last ones related to limited entry. But before we kind of leave the world of permit provisions and qualifications, I did want to do a little housekeeping. There is one issue. If you look at your decision document on page 7, it's related to permit provisions in bold. Basically, at the last committee meeting, we were discussing something that the committee asked staff to work on after that meeting, but before this council meeting, for you to consider. And in summary, what it's related to has to do with a lot of the data issues that I've been talking about and the concerns we've been having and how they would potentially affect eligibility and allocations for qualifiers. And what we've discussed is described on page 22 of the main EIS document. And all it really is an additional paragraph that I could add to the document. And the way we discussed it at the committee level was that if some sort of pre-cut at all of this qualification could occur with a more straightforward way to do it, it could be done more quickly, And then, of course, an appeals process would still exist. And in a nutshell, what that paragraph tries to describe is that the National Marine Fisheries Service, unless the council adds specific criteria for this, would, you know, do the process the best that they could. But we do have the ability to give them a little direction in terms of a pre-qualification process. And what this paragraph illustrates is that we would be giving them direction to, at first, take the dealer data, and a lot of the landings, or a good portion of them anyway, we've seen that the landings are in excess of 400 pounds. Some of those we can figure out why, and some of them we can't. So the recommendation described here, if the council agrees with it, would be to artificially bring all of those landings to 400 pounds per trip right from the start, and then set up all of the qualifications based on that. And then later, if a vessel is not content with their qualification contribution, they could go through the appeals process. And the idea here is just to ease this process and prevent any illegal landings and so forth from having effects on other qualifying vessels.
So you're saying if the council doesn't object, you're going to put that in the document? Okay.
The committee agreed with it in principle, but we didn't have the text very specifically at the time. I worked on it with NIMF staff since then, and this is what we came up with.
Anyone object to that? Okay.
Okay, thanks for that. And the only other two things, I don't want to skip ahead, but I did explain in the beginning that there are a few things at the end of this document. Once we get through Amendment 11 decisions, there are potentially several new ideas that could be considered. And originally I was going to do them all at the end, but maybe it makes more sense to do the ones related to permit provisions and qualification now, since that's what we're kind of focused on. So I would just ask that you turn your decision document a little bit further. And at this time, I would want to raise the two kind of issues from staff. The other ones we haven't really gotten to yet, so I'm going to skip over those. But there's one bullet on page 15 of your decision document under these new, potentially new alternatives. And the first one, hopefully, again, could be something we address rather quickly. And then the second one is not in your document. It's what I referred to earlier in the morning that is something that came up since this decision document was printed, and I handed out a one-page summary of the issue. So those two things I'd like to discuss now before we move on with the rest of the decisions in the document. As a little background, again, neither of these issues came up at the committee level. The first one is because we simply just run out of time at these committee meetings to get through everything. But we have discussed this, the first one is a state water exemption program issue, several times in passing at previous committee meetings, but we just never get the time to get it on paper. So here it is. You can take it or leave it. It's not the most critical thing for Amendment 11. Can certainly be addressed at later times. But the background on the issue is that right now the Fishery Management Plan has the ability for a state water exemption program. There are several of them in effect right now. Technically, the agency is supposed to review a plan from a certain coastal state and determine whether or not it's consistent with the conservation goals of Amendment 11. Now, one thing we've talked about during Amendment 11 is that we're going to have a very potentially different fishery and place after Amendment 11 is implemented. So it certainly would be advantageous for the agency to review at least the existing state water exemption programs and perhaps even consider more strict guidelines for them. Currently, the council doesn't have specific input on how the agency determines that a program is consistent and conservation neutral. What this paragraph does is gives them a little bit more, it actually puts them to the fire that they have to review them on a more regular basis. Right now, once the determination's made, that just remains in effect forever until it's revisited. There's nothing that requires them to revisit it. So this paragraph tries to require that through every biennial framework, so at least these coastal state exemption programs are reviewed in a more normal time frame. It also includes some sort of language related to being a little bit more consistent with potential things that would be implemented in Amendment 11. So I'll just give you a chance to read the paragraph and see if you are comfortable with it or not. And the idea would be to add something like this within the limited entry permit provision section.
Has everyone had a chance to read it? So you're just going to slide this language in with the limited access provision language? Okay. Is there any objection to that? Any further discussion? John Nelson.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. It would seem to me that if a federal program was more restricted than what a state waters had, that, and you were dealing with a federally permitted vessel, they would have to abide by the more restrictive measures. Since I think that's already, or that certainly could be stated that way as necessary, but I'm a little leery of, and this goes to state federal relationships. I'm not sure that the state should be required to submit anything to the feds for them to okay what is done in state waters.
Well, just a little history on this exemption. This only applies to federal permit holders. So,
but I don't think the state needs to submit something to the service saying, is it okay with this program, for the federally permitted boats? The federally permitted boats would already have to abide by the more restrictive program.
I guess I'm confused by John's point. Where do you think the requirement is that the state has to submit something?
Isn't it on page 15, Pat, the last sentence says Amendment 11 would therefore require a state waters exemption program be required to undergo a review? So doesn't that indicate that there's some type of approval then by the federal partner that, yes, you can have this exemption program? Right? Maybe I'm missing something, but that's what it sounds like to me.
That's the existing requirement that the state waters exemption for federal permit holders be approved through the federal regulations. So this continues to be consistent with that, but what it says is that it will be reviewed more regularly than it has been because of the changing nature of the regulations for this category. So it's not approval for the state waters program, it's approval for the federal exemption.
I'm not sure if it'll help, but I think the burden, the maybe potential additional burden you're referring to is not on the coastal states. It's actually on the agency to do a more it's not in stone. They did it once, and there's no requirement to review these programs. They're in there. This would require the agency to consider them in each biennial framework process. There's no additional burden from the states.
Dr. Pierce.
Does any state have an exemption now?
Massachusetts?
We do.
New Hampshire and Maine.
We do. That's a surprise to me. Meaning that federal permit holders in fishing inside state waters could have a larger possession limit than...
You could potentially have different gear and a different possession limit.
Really? That's interesting. Thank you. I'll have to think about that one.
Anyone else? Paul Howard.
Just to think this through, as you're looking towards a Gulf of Maine permit, right? Eventually we'll be talking about a Gulf of Maine permit where we'll be eventually having science to set tax in the Gulf of Maine. Is that you talked about eventually we'll have to be getting some science for there and setting some tax for Gulf of Maine scallops. This becomes important because you're going to have to separate scallop state landings and federal landings, like we do with groundfish. It's one resource, right?
I'm not sure how you want me to respond, but I don't know if they're totally related, but this really was just more of a putting the agency to the fire to review these things and not let them go unnoticed that they actually exist. It's just putting more teeth into that that state water exemption that's currently there.
And I'm saying it's going to be, as we start to manage Gulf of Maine, New Hampshire, Maine, and Massachusetts inshore scallop fishery, we're going to have to pay attention to consistency, otherwise you have conflicting rules.
Yes, and perhaps newer things would be considered to make sure that those tacks are not exceeded in state waters too.
Well, you have to.
Anyone else? Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, I don't mind this language being in there. I mean, we never applied for the exemption, obviously, but it exists. We've never taken advantage of it, and why would we, since one thing we don't want to do in our state, and I'm sure this is the situation in the other states, is not draw more effort into our state waters by providing, in a sense, loopholes. Making our state waters attractive, but doesn't make any sense. It's just contrary to what we've been doing with our management of all of our species and how it meshes with council management. So, I mean, if this calls for some additional review, further discussion with NIMS as to what we're doing with inside our state waters, justifying that, I'd have no problem with that.
Anyone else? Terry, state event, huh?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have any problem with it either.
Okay. All right. Okay, Dave.
Okay, super. There's one more of these, and it's on the one pager that does not have a number on it that was handed out at your table this morning. And on the top of it, it says, under new alternatives to potentially be considered in Amendment 11 in the decision document from staff. So there's one additional bullet, and then we'll get back to the regular list of decisions. This issue, unfortunately, didn't come up earlier because it would have been useful to get some input from certainly the advisors and the committee on it, but sometimes how these things work, you don't always see how everything's going to fit in terms of actually implementing this structure until you have time to let it set in. But regardless, here it is now. The bullet there describes that temporary measures to address mortality from the general category fishery during transition to a limited entry program with allocation on an individual basis. We kind of realized more recently that implementing any kind of limited entry program always takes a little while to develop and also implement. And when you sit down and try to figure out the number of people that would actually qualify, when you have a year to apply and then potentially another year to appeal, that process gets a couple years ahead of you. And when you're talking about implementing a TAC at the same exact time, it becomes very awkward to know the exact pool of participants that you're going to have. And also, because a lot of the alternatives are based on their access being on an individual basis, you know, how are you going to allocate that without potentially exceeding some TAC? So we had a lot of discussions about this in the council staff and the agency staff about what to do about it. tried to, we came up with a couple creative ideas, but a lot of them are honestly pretty complicated and would be very difficult to do. So what's presented here is one alternative that may be the most straightforward thing to do in this sort of transition period between open access to limited entry. And I'll just run through some of this to make sure people are understanding the intent of it. So basically, until the final number of participants is known, the individual allocations cannot be made with certainty that additional vessels would not later qualify and ultimately exceed some sort of TAC. So again, one potential solution is to implement the limited entry program first and identify who's in and who's out, and then actually phase in the individual allocation part of Amendment 11 later after the universe of vessels is a more concrete number. And in the interim years, actually, a hard TAC would be implemented instead for those years. Now, the document and all the input you've heard from the advisors has been negative about hard TACs. There are definitely negative consequences of derby fishing. The document illustrates that. People are definitely aware of it. Neither the committee nor the advisors show support of that for this fishery long term. However, there are alternatives already in this document that we could use in terms of providing a way to, for the, these few years until limited entry could be adopted. That's pretty much all I was going to mention. It is something new. Certainly, we haven't discussed this at the committee level, as I explained, but in terms of actually the analysis being done to do some sort of transition management until the limited entry program could be fully enforced, that type of supporting analysis is available and already in the document.
So this is a hard tack for 1 to 2 years with no allocation, so it's a derby until we can figure out who's in and who's out. After we make the decision at the council, it's going to take 18 to 24 months to determine who's in and who's out. And after that's done, then you can allocate either trips or pounds.
Yeah, it's the first part isn't as difficult in terms of you can make that initial determination of who's in and who's out. It's that the real final number of participants you won't really know until 1 to 2 years later. And so those individual allocations that all those vessels would be granted, unless you sort of reserved some amount and didn't give it all up, you potentially would exceed that TAC because all the vessels that are going to appeal potentially are permitted to continue to fish.
Right. Okay.
There are ways in the document, there are some alternatives I'm sure you're familiar with that reduce the impacts of a derby fishery, like spreading it out over quarters and trimesters, but if there's another way, then certainly we'd want to consider that too.
Dave?
Okay, so to that end, because it is going to take time to phase this in, we need this stopgap measure. And as Deirdre said, we have, you know, annual hard tack, and the alternatives have been analyzed that would break it out by quarter and trimester and the way it's done in other fisheries now. So I have a motion, and this isn't from the committee. This is from me, so it'll need a second, to include a measure to establish a temporary hard tack for 2 years or until the individual allocation program can be implemented, individual or tier, because it remains to be seen how this gets done, and establish a similar temporary hard tack quota for limited access vessels fishing in the general category for the transition period to individual allocation.
It's not on the board, but does somebody want to second that? Seconded by Pat Kirkle. Discussion? Dave Gaethel?
Yeah, I mean, I personally don't like this idea at all. Why couldn't, as an example, you hold back whatever percentage of the TAC you think could possibly be eaten up by an appeals process and just say that's unfishable till the appeals process or whatever it is complete. I mean, nothing would shorten up this appeals process like a whole bunch of stuff being withheld that could become available once everybody got done filing their forms. I just don't understand why it's going to take 2 years to to do this. I mean, if you tell people they got to have their permit application in a month, it's a month. You either get it in or you don't. I don't like this idea for all the reasons I don't like high tax and derbies and everything else that it's going to create. I can't support it.
Anybody else? Jim Odlin.
Yes, I'm going to oppose this motion. I don't understand why a small sector, we're going to cut down some participants no matter what in the first round. Some will appeal, some won't have grounds to appeal. And the fisheries as a whole isn't under a hard tack. It's under a tiger tack. So I don't understand why this category can't continue to operate under a tiger tack. And that there definitely will be less participants even with an appeals process.
Rip, and then Pat.
I'm wondering why, if we can go and establish temporary hard tax, why, and this is somewhat to Dave Gaethel's comment, why you couldn't go and establish temporary quota, individual quotas, with the caveat that knowing once all of the participants are determined that there may be some adjustment to those, but that they could fish underneath those for that first 2-year period and then make the adjustments.
Pat?
The problem is that this is a different type of access, limited access system than the council's dealt with in the past. And an individual's allocation depends on the number of people that have qualified and what level they've qualified on. So you have to know the universe to know what an individual qualifies for. I mean, it's just different than anything we've done before. There may be other ways to approach this, but this seemed to be the simplest one while we go through the process of establishing the universe. And until you have the universe, you can't tell someone what they've qualified for. In terms of the time frame, there may be some possibility to shorten that up some. We have traditionally given people an entire year to apply for the limited access permit. Certainly we could shorten that time period. But once we're beyond that time period, there's a period of time to process all of the appeals, again, to establish what the total universe is. So realistically, I don't think it could be done in less than maybe 18 months. This does, create this interim situation where we need to address what the management measures are. It's not an issue between a target tack and a hard tack. It's an issue of knowing what to allocate people. Unless we can figure out some way to make the allocations without knowing what the universe of eventual qualifiers are. And as Deidre pointed out, people can fish during appeal, so it's, at least in the interim too, it's not just knowing who the ultimate qualifiers are, it's knowing that there's going to be a universe of vessels fishing out there that might even not qualify ultimately. And until we can make the linkage between the total number of people and whatever the allocation is for this fishery, I'm not sure what the other options are.
Pat, to this issue, seems like another option could be that the council passes this in June but declines to implement it until such time that the universe of players has been sorted out.
I would defer to Gene, but until we have regulations, we can't sort out the universe of players. It's kind of a catch-22. And that's, in some ways, that's what this is. It says, okay, what we can do is certainly go forward with the limited access, limited entry part of it, and hold the rest of it while we're determining what the allocations are.
Okay. Jim Salisbury.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I, for one, don't believe that. I mean, once you have the regulation set up, you'll have, as it was said, you'll get an initial cut of who's in and who's out. People that you know are in and people you think are out. And you'll also have relatively quickly a request for appeals. And so your universe of possible participants is all those that are, you know, are in, and all those who are appealing and may be in. And in other jurisdictions, I mean, I've been involved in fisheries where we actually were fishing under those, that appeal situation, and at the end of that appeal, which did take about 2 years, it's a lengthy process, you were either in or out, and that's what happened. So the fishery starts up under the, not only the limited access, the TAC, and the allocation process that you've established, and it only gets better from there, because some of the appeals fail, and then that way it works its way back, and your individual portion becomes possibly larger. And I think that's much more realistic and fair to do. It gives everybody the ability to appeal. It gives the participants the ability to start with the new regime. And most of all, I think it avoids the derby aspects, which are, in fact, part of the reason why you're going through this whole limited entry and the individual allocation process to begin with. I think there's been great concern about safety issues involved in this, and to me, if you're concerned about the safety of somebody demanding to go out on a 400-pound trip under adverse conditions, you'd really have to be concerned about the safety of somebody going out for potentially all he could get for some portion of time. So I would advocate that the universe be, that we include in the universe all those who are definitely in and those who are under appeal after a certain point of time, and then work our way back from there. And so I would not support the motion as it stands. Thanks.
Paul Howard? Pass. Pat?
Well, you could certainly do it that way, but I think it would require assuming that the participants are everyone who qualifies and everyone who's eligible to appeal, which is pretty much everyone who currently holds a permit. And what that means is the allocations for everyone would be tiny. So.
Sally, then Jean.
Just to be clear, in this interim time period, would the 400-pound trip limit still be in effect? So it wouldn't, so there would still be limits. It wouldn't be a complete derby during this time period. Is that correct? I don't know who to ask.
I believe so. I believe it is correct. Gene?
I think that's just one layer of the regs that would be required. I think you have to work out the other interim rules to make it work as reasonably as possible, including trip limits and maybe seasonal allocations or trimester allocations or things like that. But I was going to address, I'm not sure how it would work if, what would you allocate vessels that don't qualify? What allocation would they get during their appeal? Is it just whatever they claim? I mean, because I don't understand how that would work.
Jeff?
Well, you have a basis for what makes you eligible, and people appeal based on the fact that they claim something that would qualify them under that. Like I have landings on 1999 of 500 pounds, but you don't have them on your books. So that's why I didn't get brought in here. So I've got some basis for an appeal, and under the criteria that is established, and so you recognize that I may be right, and you may be right, so you include me until you determine whether I'm right or you're right. And so it's not like you just have an infinite, not anybody who says, well, I want to go scallop fishing gets to appeal. It's you get to appeal based on your presentation. You're presumed out unless you have a rebuttable presumption that...
But anybody could appeal and make any claim they wanted for the first year.
They have to have some basis.
What would
some
that,
evidence to
but
show.
But that's what's being appealed, is whether that basis exists or not. I mean, that's the fundamental problem, and is that you create an incentive for anyone to come in, and at least for a year or two, to continue under... If they know they're going to be out, they're going to have incentive to come in and claim, hey, I had a bunch of landings that you don't have recordings. You know, I want the maximum extent, because I think I can show it on appeal. 2 years later, they don't show it, but they got 2 more years of fishing at the expense of those who do qualify. I mean, that's the problem.
Jim?
Well, at some point, they have to provide you evidence for their reason for appeal. I mean, nobody can come in and just say, well, I appeal because I want to go scallop fish. I have landed. And here's my data that shows, this is what I have to tell you I have landed. And that makes me eligible for an appeal. And then you have to determine whether that's valid or not, or whether the documents are true or not. But that's the basis.
That's what takes 2 years,
that's
to
right.
determine whether those documents are valid.
But if I have evidence, it seems to me that I should be presumed to be at least eligible to pursue an appeal. Conversely, you could do it the other way around and still have a finite universe, which is anybody who appeals may get in after 2 years, and then it'll all change after 2 years. You can do it either way, but you do have an ability to set a finite number of people who you're going to then determine what is allocated. It changes after the approval or disapproval of the appeal, but you have a way. You don't just have to say, well, we'll throw this open to what appears to be one of the other alternatives in the meantime.
Tom Hill.
Thank you.
I just wanted to make the observation that I think, as much as I think we want to be generous, the practical reality is what Gene pointed out. And that is that anybody who wants to fish for another year or two is going to appeal, regardless of whether the merits. And the merits won't be determined until at least a year into the appeals process, or maybe longer. And so the practical reality is that anybody who thinks that they want to keep fishing will appeal. And I think under those conditions, we need to have a measure that basically argues that until the appeal is won, that they don't fish, not the other way around. Seems to me to argue that they're going to continue to fish based on some future potential qualification, I think, is just in error. I think it damages the people who actually do qualify and does little in the way of clarity over the long term.
Paul Howard.
I think this is unfortunate that we have to address this at the 11th hour. It may have been, you know, that we had to do it anyway, but there are a number of things that we've discussed about safety and all kinds of things and what hard tacks do without allocations that are going to, you know, we shouldn't be able to have to live with for a year and a half to 2 years. But we're here, and we've got to get this thing in Friday. And I just don't know any way out of this. But let me just ask a question in terms of, and this is implementation, whether we were implementing IFQs or giving so many trips, we'd still have a period where we're in flux. And we don't have the time now to fix that hard tack period where you want to address some of the concerns about derbies and things like that, which we've already experienced with the elephant trunk area, 800-something trips in 12 days. We've got a very low allocation of yellowtail. that will be taken by general category as well. If we had allocated trips, say there's 459 boats or better. If we had allocated trips in tiers, some boats would get 100 trips, some boats might get 50, some might get 25 on a three-tier system, maybe, you know, different numbers. But if we don't allocate trips and we're just going to use a hard tack, those boats that might have got 100 trips over the year or 50 or 25 now are going to fish every day. They might be able to fish, those that got 25 might fish 100 because they're going to fish up to a tack and create the derby where they wouldn't have been allocated it. So there's a number of issues that would have been nice to have a lot of time to address. Can we just say that of the four? No.
Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Under the motion that's up there, who would get to actually fish during that 2-year period, or whatever time frame that takes place?
Definitely the people who have been identified as qualifiers, and I guess it's not very clear about whether it would be anybody who's in the process of an appeals or if it would just remain open to anyone with a current general category permit.
Anybody that
so what's the difference between what Jim just said? I'm having a problem with that.
All right, Ed Rodney.
No, I'm going to pass.
Jim Odlum.
I guess I don't understand the appeals process. I recently read quite closely the appeals process, and that there's even criteria on how to of what you have to meet to file for appeal. Not just everybody and their brother in the country can file for an appeal. There has to be something there. At least that's what I read. There had to be a disagreement in some document, or you had to present something to be granted even an appeal, is my reading of it. So we know we're going to have less players than are permitted now just through people that don't have anything. Then there is just disagreements and some documentation, I believe, is what grants you an appeal, if I'm correct. That's one point I wanted to make. And then the second point is to Sally that 400 pounds presents an Olympic fisheries. That's flawed, because if I know I'm under a hard TAC and I can only get 400 pounds a day and I think that it's going to be caught in 6 months, I'm going to make sure I fish every single day of that 6 months to make sure I get mine. So I don't think that rationale that a ton to 400 pounds prevents a derby fishery. It even increases the fact that it's going to be a derby fishery. So.
Pat?
There is no first cut at appeals. There is information that someone needs to submit for an appeal, but there's no initial review to say you are or you are not eligible for appeal. Anybody can appeal, and everybody does. Everybody knows the system. We've done this now in several fisheries now. Everybody appeals. And the only real qualification is that you had to have been denied. Well, there's a whole bunch of people who are going to be denied. So I think you can assume that the universe of appeals is going to be quite large. Let me start with something else. First, just a comment on the second part of this motion. I had understood, and we haven't gotten to this yet, that the limited access vessel allocation was an add-on, and this makes it sound like there's two separate tacks that would be tracked separately. And so I just want to make sure we're clear about that. But what I was going to say is, you know, maybe there's a compromise here that you only allow, for example, a 4-month application period. And then give people 4 months after that to appeal. And so only those appeals that have been submitted by the end of that four-month period, or maybe the better thing would be to say anybody that appeals within an additional 4 months will be eligible to fish in the next fishing year. And maybe the appeal process is actually longer than that, but to fish in the following fishing year, you have to have met this first deadline. I don't think, and then fishing in the second year of the program is based on qualifiers and who's ever appealed during this open appeal period. I don't think that solves the problem of still having far too many people in that transition year, and that the allocations would still potentially be quite low. But it's not quite as bad as, you know, just having it completely opened either. So, I mean, that's maybe something else the council wants to consider.
Jim Salisbury.
Well, I think it's been stated before, the present motion doesn't particularly prohibit anybody who's trying to appeal to be fishing for that hard, for this so-called hard tack limit. And so I don't see where this gains anything. I think something in the order of what Pat is suggesting has been the more typical way to deal with this. And as Tom suggested, maybe you want to say you can't fish during the appeal process until you're approved. Those all make sense to me. But to sit there and say, well, we're because we have the possibility of appeals and it may be a large number, if it's a large number, there's going to be a large number fishing under the hard tack as well to try to do all they can while they're trying to make sure that they qualify. So I'm not trying to argue for the exact method of how you do this. I think it's and perhaps the committee could have done that had they addressed this issue, but I think we really should be looking much more at a trying to implement the actual regime that is ultimately chosen and then dealing with the appeals process in a logical way and maybe the council should specify or give guidance as to how we would, whether you'd be able to fish during that or not and things like that. So I would urge us not to follow through with the motion on the floor and I guess I would offer a substitute motion that would should have thought of this before I opened my mouth.
While you're thinking about it.
Maybe you should look at this as alternative. I mean, and then add whatever you come up with as another alternative. I think we're thinking on the fly here, and it might be beneficial to have this as one of the options if nothing else practical comes up, but come up with any other alternatives that we might think of and let the public comment on it. And before you, because you're not making a decision on that today, you're just coming up with alternatives. So maybe instead of as a substitute, you could amend to add another alternative or additional alternatives.
Pat?
I think that's a really good suggestion because I've actually already thought of a reason why my proposal wouldn't work. So.
Gene, is there any reason why the council couldn't have as an option that could ultimately be adopted and implemented that said if you don't make the first cut and you want to appeal, great, but you're not fishing until it's determined whether or not your appeal is sound?
It's a due process argument that, somebody would be arbitrarily prohibited from taking advantage of this privilege without having a full opportunity to show that they qualify or don't qualify.
So that's a yes.
You could put it in this at this stage of the document. I think there's and see what kind of comments you get, but I think it has some potential fundamental legal flaws to it.
Okay. Good. Pat?
Along that line, is it possible though to treat them differently? In other words, to go through with the full program for qualifiers and maybe have the hard tack only for those under appeal, fishing under appeal?
I think that's a potential. I think it would depend on how you treat them differently, what level of difference of treatment they're getting.
Dave Simpson, did you have your hand up? Have we hit on that issue? Subject moot. Okay. Well, why don't we address the motion on the board, and then if people want to gin up another motion or another alternative, then we can address that later on today. Dave?
And just to clarify, we're going to take Gene up on his point to make this an alternative as opposed to, you know, adding text.
Okay. I don't believe I took any comment from the audience on this, so I'm going to have some limited comment. Harriet, I haven't heard from you today.
I've got a couple of questions. I have a limited access vote, so this is, you know, the general category permit people, but I have a question. In Amendment 4 and 5, when they were passed, the government sent out a paper to everybody saying where you were. And you either, you had to go up and get your permit if you wanted to fish for the fishing year, which started either May 1994 or March 1994. And when you went up to get that permit, you were allowed to fish in that category that the government said you were in. You had till the December 31st to submit your paperwork for appeal. And then if you won your appeal, you moved to the category you were appealing for. And if you didn't, you didn't. Now, my question here is with these people, how do you plan to get started with them? Say you pass the amendment and it becomes a limited access fishery. What's the next step National Marine Fisheries is going to do? Are they going to send out a mass mailing to these people like they did with multi-species and limited access scallop people and tell them where they feel they stand according to their records, or what's the baseline here that you're working with?
I expect that we would handle it like we have the other limited access programs and like we've recently done for herring, and that is send out a letter, two different sets of letters, one to people that we know from our own databases qualify, and then a second letter to everyone else to say that based on the records we have, we don't know if you qualify and you need to submit records if you think you do.
Right. Well, with the limited access, all I know is what you got your days and you got your, of course, it was a tiered system with the scalloping, and they told you, and then you fished under whatever you were, the government said you were, with your option to go in for appeal. So people were fishing, or if they said they didn't qualify, they weren't fishing till they got in for their appeal, and then they were decided if they were going to fish and under what level they were going to fish. So, I mean, if that's going to happen here, there's got to be, they've got something to work with before they start, and you've got something to know who was fishing. Because what I've listened to here today, everything that has been passed, of course it hasn't gone to public hearing, is increasing the permits. Like one person in 10 years, you can probably have one boat if you really wanted to qualify maybe 20 people. So you get a lot of people here. You're talking about a lot of permits. And you haven't decided yet if it's a tier system or if it's individual, which was decided, I know, in multi-species and scalloping before it ever went out. One was individual and one was a tier system, the fleet system in multi-species, and then in scalloping it was a tier system. So just, you know, sit in the audience is more or less like it's going in circles. I'm just wondering. Thank you.
Bruce?
Question for Gene. I believe if you were to deny somebody their permit instantly when you denied it, but then you would, when you appealed it, they put an appeal, you would take your license away. I believe that's not due process, and I would believe that could probably backfire. I mean, that has not been the case with other fisheries, am I correct?
Yeah, that's what I raised just a minute ago, is that that's the problem.
Yeah, I think you're correct, and I disagree with Tom, because I think to just all of a sudden take it and then have to prove it, that stops you cold. And I don't think that's the proper way to do this.
Maggie?
Thank you. Maggie Raymond, Associated Fisheries of Maine. I have to agree with Paul's comment about having to deal with this at this 11th hour. I can't believe that we're sitting here talking about putting this fishery under a Derby tack for 2 years. I just can't. I don't know how we got there. So I'm glad to hear the option that this would not be the only, the suggestion that this would not be the only option, because this is a terrible option. And if this is the only option, I don't even know where to begin to address that. So in terms of other options, I think Pat suggested the possibility that you could move this amendment forward, approving whatever qualification criteria you ultimately choose, and then hopefully you would also stop giving out new permits to people who hadn't been in the past, but I don't know if that is part of what you were thinking about, Pat. But at any rate, you would at least begin the process of qualifying people, and then when you are able to sort through all the appeals, that's when the measures would kick in. Because this is like opening, this is just like opening the floodgates and saying, okay, you got 2 years now to go out and kill every scallop you can. And then, you know, you might be able to continue to fish afterwards if there's any scallops left after you kill them, you know, wiped them out for 2 years. It just will set up that mindset in people. But if the process goes forward and the qualifications are going forward, people who aren't doing it now might not do it. People who aren't fishing now, who, you know, might not go out and fish. But if there's a derby, I guarantee people are going to go out and fish. So I hope at least you will consider adding the option that Pat suggested earlier about moving forward with the limited access part. And once all the appeals are exhausted, then you know, the next day you implement the measures or the next month or whatever, because that is just a much more, I think, reasonable option from a conservation perspective and from a safety perspective. So please consider adding that option to the list of possibilities. Thank you.
Bob Keyes.
Thank you, Bob Keyes. this is crazy that now this comes up. It seems like we've spent so much time here identifying what kind of plan we want implemented, and now we find out that we may be stuck with everything we didn't want for 2 years. And 2 years is a long time in a small boat. There's no way that we can afford to potentially lose 2 years. I think that I don't see why we can't just go on like we're doing and then, you know, have everything, get the final decision, and then when all the appeals get sorted out, then have the plan enacted. And in the meantime, it remains as it is now. There's no other way. Otherwise, we're going to have the exact plan that we all voted that we didn't want, an unsafe plan, an uneconomical plan, and everything else that we didn't want. Thank you.
Take a few more comments. Dan Cullen and Steve, Dave Frula, back to the council after that. To the motion, please.
I want to agree with Pat and Paul, but I do think there's a process out of this that is relatively possible here. I know one of the things is that you're grappling with your options, with one of them being if you have a unique number of trips per vessel or pounds per vessel. One of the options that you might choose ultimately would be three-tier. If you were to think that you might be choosing three-tier, you would say that there will be a discrete appeal process that people must appeal by a certain period of time. When they appeal, they would be stating what they're appealing for. I'm in one, but I should be in two. I'm in two, I should be in three. I'm in zero, I should be in one. Whatever, however you'd be clear, NIMS would prepare that. NIMS would then assume that all the appeals would be successful. It would then be able to allocate it for the first year, and as people failed in their appeals, then the pie would get a little bigger. But it seems that, first thing, no appeal process can go on forever. So if you discreetly have the appeal process be clear when you have to apply for, and again, Harriet is correct, when we went to limited access in Scallop, in the access fleet, you had to appeal as if you're saying, I'm in the wrong category, I should be in that category. Now, again, if you are planning to approve as a general category plan that every vessel will have a unique number of trips, then you couldn't do this because you couldn't figure that out. But if you're actually going to have three tiers and people are going to have a discrete period of time to apply, and as long as it's before the beginning of the fishing year, then it's a simple series of mathematics. It's correct for the first year or two until the appeal process is done. The pie will be a little bit smaller for each person. But if every appeal is successful, well, then it'll be perfect the first time out. And since people will have to submit records, and to be clear, the appeal process is not as, I'm sure everybody who can appeal will, but it's clear from reading the regs already and other processes, you're going to have to submit dealer landing slips, some proof of landing, food purchases, something to prove it. So unless people are going to create a lot of false documents, the odds are they might win their appeals, in which case you know the process will work well. So if you think at the options that you have in your plan now and you chose them selectively, this would not be as big a problem as people think. And that's what I would suggest you do. Your preferred alternative would be three-tier. Your appeals process say that you're going to have to submit this before the beginning of the fishing year, and if you don't submit before that, then you don't have an appeal anyway, and you assume they're all going to be valid, and then as they winnow out, you're okay. You will not have a derby. You will have, your plan will work, and you can move ahead. Thank you.
Steve? David, you're on deck.
Steve Willett. I echo the sentiments of the last couple speakers. Going to a hard TAC alternative for 2 years is going to be disastrous. And clearly needs to be avoided at all costs. Sounds to me like the real issue here is the appeal process. And I'm not sure if it's possible to do it in this plan, but it may be appropriate here to set up an alternative that really limits the ability of people to fish during the pendency of an appeal. Not to deprive people who may prevail of the opportunity to fish, but to prevent what in the past has been a fairly simple way to keep fishing for a year or two, which is just to turn in an appeal form. And for those of you who aren't familiar, when denied a permit, really all you need to do is, when you get the denial, it's basically a form, and you say, I appeal, and you turn it in, and NIMS will issue you a letter of authorization or a permit, depending on on which plan it's under. And as long as you can delay the appeal, you can continue fishing. And I am aware of people who, with absolutely no basis for an appeal, have managed to get 1 or 2 years, full years, under the monkfish plan. The difficulty is that there is no upfront process that, there's not even a straight face test. It's just you signed it, you proceed. And I know the agency, I say that kind of tongue-in-cheek. I know the agency is trying its best to make sure that they don't stop somebody from fishing who may not be able to come right in and appeal and present their appeal. But given the implications for this program, I think it might be appropriate to develop an appeal process that basically says until you present your appeal, you are not going to be able to fish. You must present an appeal package that at least meets the borderline test of showing that you had your 2004 permit or proof that the boat that you had in 2004 has been replaced and this is the boat that you're applying for, must, you know, instead of coming in saying, oh, I'm applying for 40,000 pounds, at least you've got to present the evidence to substantiate it and have somebody, you know, somebody may have to take a first pass at it. But the implications of not being able to do that up front and finding some way to quickly winnow out some of the, I won't call them frivolous, but I'll call them wholly unsubstantiated appeals, appears to be the only way to tackle this problem. And so I strongly urge you to have another option which creates a specific limitation on people who want to fish pending an appeal, a limited time to get in for the first or second fishing year, saying you must file not only an appeal but a completed package that substantiates the amount of time you're intending to fish by a certain date, or you're going to have to wait until your appeal runs before you can actually fish. Most people who are fishing in this, who are participating in the general category fishery, are already pulling together documents. I mean, I know my clients have all requested their histories from the Fisheries Service. They found inconsistencies, and they're working to make sure their dealers go back and correct where landings were attributed to the wrong boat. They're pulling together their own landings where dealers may not have reported or may have reported in bulk. So somebody who is seriously following this and is concerned about qualification or level of qualification presumably is going to be able to respond very shortly after the regulations are published. And so it may be somewhat at variance with NIMS process, but my suggestion is that you do create very strict guidelines for people to participate in the fishery pending appeal based upon what they submit and when they submit it. Thank you.
David?
David Hula for the Fisheries Survival Fund. I think everybody was in Mystic a year ago, and there was a plan under consideration that really isn't much different than this one, other than it looks like for your preferreds, you're subbing out opportunity days for a quota, and there's discussion of something for Maine, all of which are important points, but that took a year. It was late doing this 2 years ago. If you wait another 2 years to do something, it's going to be irresponsible. You need to put some mortality controls in place on this fishery. Mr. Cohen raised the point that I wanted to address was, I just had the question of whether if you used a tiered system, it would materially change the implementation time, because it's sort of, you're batching people in groups rather than giving an individual allocation. And if that's the rub, or if it's just the fact of qualification in general and whether he's identified a point or not, maybe not for today, but for the public hearing process.
Yeah, I think Dan's right that the under the equal allocation for the with the three tiers, it's less of a problem. I don't think it goes away entirely, because you still need to bin people, and then decisions on allocation within those tiers are based on the number of people in those tiers and the number of people overall. But it's certainly less complicated than trying to determine individual allocations and how those individual allocations fit into the whole. So it's, I think it's a little bit better, but it doesn't completely solve the problem.
Paul?
Dee, I think that there's roughly 3,500 general category permits in total universe. 3,000-ish?
Well, if you take the 11-year time period and count up the number of unique permits that have been given out in any of those years, there's 4,777. One cut I was thinking about would be that sounds like a huge number, of course, but of those vessels, 924 have actually landed 1 pound of scallops.
So my point is that 924 vessels over the 11-year period have landed. So we're not talking 3,000, 2,000. Again, if we go back to what some of the audience has said about let's limit the universe of who can appeal so that you can rule out anyone over the control date, you know, over 2004, you don't get an appeal. Seems logical to me. And we ought to put in there, if you haven't fished between a certain date, you can appeal, but you're not going to be able to fish while you appeal, that type of thing. So now you're down to maybe, and if you look at just fishing in 2004, it could be 400 boats that landed. You know, if you look from 2000, from up till 2004, 1194 to 2004, it's 900. But if you make that a smaller area of allowing when you can appeal, you might be down to less than what we've qualified now. So I don't know if we have a huge problem here to start addressing a huge amount of analysis and trying to fix something today by just saying that if you fished in 2004 and landed scallops on a general category permit, if you appeal, you can get trips. But if you hadn't fished, you can appeal, but you don't get trips. You can't continue to fish. Something like that. Then we'll know how many trips to give, because the universe is going to be around 500 boats, so you can still give so many trips over the year to 500 boats or be that way.
I'm going to call for a 5-minute break. But I think we have a couple of additional alternatives that we'll talk about, put up on the board. I also want to remind people, if there's people in the audience that are here specifically for the 4 o'clock agenda item, which is the habitat hearing, we will get to that. Probably not at 4 o'clock, but I'm going to look for a natural break in the discussion on scallops, and we will go to the habitat portion of the agenda and then come back to scallops. Okay. So we have a motion on the board. As I said, there's at least two other motions that are going to be made. So I recommend that we act on this motion and then see what we think about the other ones that are going to be made. So I'm going to call the question on the motion on the board. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Three. Opposed? Nine. 10. Abstentions? Motion fails. 3-10. 1 abstention. Okay. Dave?
I'm going to move the same motion above, except that the hard tack would be set at 10% of the overall allowable catch. Just to set up a backstop, really, of the idea is here that the control date would apply, the qualification period would apply to limit the universe of participants, the 400-pound trip limit would apply, requirement for VMS would apply, all of those things would apply. And should keep the catch around what we expect in the 5-7% range, but if it fails to, this is a backstop. So it's not an expectation they would catch this much, but it's a backstop to prevent that, prevent it from running out of control.
Okay. Is there a second to that motion? Seconded by Mark Gibson. Discussion on the motion. So the 10% is only during the transition period?
Yeah, we're just talking about the transition period.
Right,
here.
Okay. Anyone on the council? Anyone in the audience? Dave Frullo. Oh, sorry, Dr. Pierce.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman. How does this differ from the motion that just failed?
The motion that failed was locked at 5%. This is the same motion, but it elevates the percentage for the general category to 10% during the transition period.
So it's just a larger hard quota. Okay. So it's, okay.
Anyone else on the council? Okay, Dave.
I guess the first question, David Frula, for the Fishery Survival Fund, is does that mean that the current limited access fleet would be reduced, have 90% versus where you're planning to end up at? Or is it this sort of just a precautionary thing and that you might end up overshooting it, or is this going to come from the limited access fleet's allocation? And then the second question that I have is, do you think that it's rational or fair to make the limited access fleet fund what the regional director is saying are quite a few frivolous appeals, along with some good ones? Doesn't seem fair.
Pat, to that point.
Yeah, to that point. It comes from the total allocation. And we did talk about that. It's actually consistent with what's being done now. And if you didn't have some sort of cap, some sort of overall limit, then you'd probably still be assuming somewhere between 10 and 14%. So it in some ways maintains status quo for the interim period.
Anyone else in the audience? Ron Smolowitz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smolowitz. I still don't think David Frula's question got an answer. What it maintains is overfishing for two more years, and the only way to cut it back is to cut back the limited access fleet. So are we expecting that Framework 19 is going to cut back the limited access fleet by 10%? That's a significant impact, a significant impact.
Jim Kendall.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim Kendall of Bedford Seafield Consulting. I've been trying to stay out of this fight as much as I can. But the question I have here is if we're expecting most of these vessels that are currently participating in the general category to just pick up their bags and go away, why wouldn't they appeal? If that can drag out and continue to maintain almost the same percentage as we can expect them to take over the next several years, what would be the reasoning for them to pull out? Why wouldn't they appeal just to extend the lifetime of their particular access to this fishery? I just don't understand what's going to drive that issue to make it any cleaner or more clear-cut than what we're currently doing now. I mean, there's absolutely nothing to be gained by them to withdraw from this fishery. And now you're looking to increase the TAC to a point, like I say, that's almost matching what their harvest levels currently are. In light of the fact, as Ron just stated and David Frula, that we're facing consequences of further reductions on our TAC and limited access fleet. So I think something needs to be directed in that direction to see that how you're going to try and minimize at least this. This is just a guarantee of a two-year future.
Bruce, and then I'm going to come back to the council.
I think we're speaking of being fair. What the hell is more fair? You're asking us to give our lives away in maybe 2 years and to go out of the fishery. Can you wait 2 years, guys? I mean, you want us to just be gone. I mean, you want 90% of it even now, and you want us to just go away instantly.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Eddie Welch, Fishing Vessel Westport. I see two things happening here. That 10% just extends that Derby fishing into the worst weather. And we were since 1990 building this industry. We don't want it just to go away, but I think it's more than fair, 5%.
Sir, in the baseball hat.
My name's Bill Wazalewski, a fishing vessel William and Lauren, and I don't want anybody to go away, but the fact of the matter is there's only so much of a resource there, and you folks have to stop dragging your feet. In my port alone, I watched 30 day boats come in one day, 12,000 pounds. There is an impact there, and I wish they could all stay in it, but they can't. And the longer you drag your feet, the worse it's going to be. My boat was a combination boat, scalloper, dragger. They changed the date when you could qualify for your dragging days. I had to choose. I couldn't have both. It's a fact. That's the way fisheries management is. It's time for you guys to make the tough decisions. The 10% is not right. It's nowhere near the historical value of 2%. You're out of line with this one. Think about it. Thank you.
Jim O'Malley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim O'Malley, very briefly, as always. I think there's another way to skin this cat, and it may be purely administrative. You could require a signed statement that the appeal, the challenge to NMFS numbers was made in good faith, and a bond that was subject to forfeiture if it was determined that the appeal was either frivolous or outright fraudulent, and treated as a NOVA. The other thing that you could do is, in the case of an appeal that was determined to be fraudulent or frivolous, that the amount of landings would be covered by a bond for all the landings that had taken place during that appeal process, and you lose it as a result of having a determination that that these landings were really conducted on a frivolous appeal or a fraudulent one. And I would urge the agency to look at those mechanisms, because I think that in this day and age, with the value of permits what they are, people would be very reluctant to jeopardize those permits or a year's work if they got the message early on that if your appeal were frivolous or fraudulent, you would lose the proceeds that you had gained during that process. Thank you.
Bob in the back.
Thank you, Bob Keyes. Is there any discussion at this point whether this is going to be just a yearly tack, or is it supposed to be a quarterly tack, or is that going to be something that's decided later? And secondly, I think that, there was a large group of officials, fishermen, taking advantage of a resource, and I guess mostly down south, and there was a problem. Right now, however, that problem is not really there. The fishing down south, from what I understand, is all but non-existent, general category boats, because there's nothing there. It's wiped out. And in New England, the fishing has slowed down quite a bit also. I think another extending this till we are actually ready to implement the rule is with a 10% tack is a much better idea. Thank you.
Last comment, Dan Cohen. Then I'm coming back to the council.
Again, this is a public hearing comment. So, a public hearing document. So you could include this. It's pretty outrageous, but you could include it. But I'm hoping there are other practical ideas that will be put forward as options, including one option, which would have a specified appeals process that is requiring people to submit before the implementation of the plan year, so that NMFS would know the world of the appeals and just use that within the context. That would be a separate option that would be clear that you would not overfish, means that those people who you would be dividing the pie slightly, but it would be a separate option. And I would hope that that would also be an option in the document. Thank you. I have one last comment or question. Does anybody have one of those little screwdrivers to put the screws back in? Because I have the screw, but I don't have the screwdriver. No help. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for that comment. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, Paul Howard.
I just wanted to think things through a little bit. And then in this fall, we're deciding overall catch limits and tax for 2008 and 2009. And if we do this, I'm trying to think of the timing of when we would need to have the universe of permittees to actually assign trips instead of having a hard quota, because we eventually, I think, will go towards, I think that's what we voted on, right, to go towards assigning trips. That was a preferred alternative. So if we're going to go to a preferred alternative and vote for trips sometime, we have to have it done for the 2010 fishing year, because I'm trying to think how we could get in trips without with a mechanism to do that. Do you see what I'm saying? And you can't do it halfway through. You can't go from quota, hard tack, to assigning trips with 5% halfway through the year. I don't think you can do it. So we're really talking about 2010, right?
Well, yes, I think originally the idea was that the reason we pushed hard to get decisions in June is so that we could go under the assumption in development and final decisions of Framework 19 that we would be able to move forward with whatever strategy the council picks in June. In light of these things and issues of taking longer and so forth, if something like this ended up selecting having some sort of temporary measures in place, then, yes, Framework 19 would end up allocating a potentially different strategy for those two fishing years until the pool of participants would be known.
Who else on the council? Dana Rice.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a comment. I just can't imagine. I mean, there's obviously a variation in some numbers there, but I can't get over the idea. I mean, I don't know what happens down south of the Cape in the fishery, but I can't get over the idea that we're looking at some type of a damn boogeyman here. I just don't see all of these numbers of people coming out and using this appeals process to rig up a boat and go fishing when they know it's a temporary thing, that when there's not that many scallops there, the price of fuel is high. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but I really think, or I'll ask the question, is this a definite, or is this just some damned illusion that's bogging down the whole afternoon's process? And I really think it is. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Anyone else? Okay, I'm going to call the question. All those in favor, please raise your hand. 4. 5. I'm going to try it again because hands are going up and down. All those in favor of putting this in as an alternative in the public document? 1, 2, 3. 9. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. The motion carries 9-7. Are there any other alternatives people would like to offer up for this? Rip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I gave the wording. I would like to propose another alternative. I gave the wording away, so I don't have it right in front of me. But it should come up on the screen here. That the general category scallop permit holders fish under the existing regs during the appeals process. All those who had a permit during the qualifying years prior to the control date qualify to fish. Qualification would be based on the measures voted in under Amendment 11 and put in place at the end of the appeals process, or it's not 22 years. We don't need to debate this another 22 years. At 2 years, whichever is shorter. The rationale is that at least by using whatever the qualifying years are, whether it ends up being the 94 through 2004 or the 2000 through 2004, will take a cut down on the number of potential permit holders who can fish during that period.
Seconded by Terry Stockwell. Discussion on the motion. Gene Martin's got his hand up.
Yeah, just to clarify, when you say all those that had a permit during the qualifying years, do you need to add the phrase and have appealed their eligibility? Because this would mean even those that don't have any landings and wouldn't have appealed still get to fish for the 2 years. So I'm just asking for clarification that they had to have had the permit and they're appealing a denial because they don't pre-qualify. Okay.
You okay with that, Terry?
Actually, I'm a little bit confused by it, Gene. Way it sounds like you've worded it is that they've had to have a permit and they have to appeal. Would not those folks who qualify during the qualifying years be in anyhow? If they're appealing, it would be a second category.
Yeah. Vessels that pre-qualify, according to our own records, automatically are in under this motion. And in addition, vessels that qualify based on the having obtained a permit in the qualifying years, but that don't pre-qualify based on our records, that think that they do qualify and appeal, then they also would be able to fish for the up to the 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you on that explanatory. It's good with me.
Dee?
I just had a quick follow-up on Gene's point, too. So this would also then also have to assume, though, that we will know that the timeline for applying and appealing would have to expire before the start of that fishing year. So just to remind people, we're talking about March 08, so we'd have to make sure that the appeals application and appeals timelines could expire before then.
Pat?
That's not possible, not March 08. Do you mean March 09? The regulations, I mean, if this amendment is approved, we're talking about, what, December or January? I think December 2007, January 2008. So I think we can figure out the timing of it between now and the June council meeting. I had a question on that. I had understood that this part about only people who have held the permit and qualified as a result of holding the permit was also part of the last motion. So I just wanted to be clear on that. Okay. Thanks.
Rodney, was your hand up before? It's down now. Okay. Okay. Anyone else on the council? Anyone in the audience? Harriet?
Personally, and I'm probably missing quite a few things, no matter what the percentage is, to me, I see a bookkeeping problem here and a baseline problem. Because you've got to get to the people, and they've got to know where they are. And when you say existing regs, you mean the 400 pounds a trip that's going on now? Is that what you're referring to by existing regs? So what you're saying really is this is not going to go in for 2 years. We're going to be status quo. Because what I see here is two things. Somebody knows where they are, perhaps, so they know what their permit is, and maybe, let's say they're at the low end. why would that man even bother to come and get a permit at the low end if he can stay with 400 pounds a trip and keep going? These gentlemen, let's give them credit. They know what's going on there. This is something wrong. No matter what percentages you're talking about here, you have problems with the process. You should be able to know now how many people are fishing up to the control date. You should know what they've fished, according to your records, where you see them, either how much poundage they've caught, how many trips they've made. Basically, you should know both, because you said you were going to go down to 400 pounds a trip as a maximum, and I guess you, I don't know if it was clear, Deidre, if you were going to acknowledge trips under 400 pounds or just cut ones over down to 400 to just keep it clear that we passed earlier today. That in the record, some people had more than 400 pounds and some bookkeeping problems. So when you acknowledge those trips, are you just going to move those trips all to 400 pounds? And if they're less than 400 pounds, you're going to come with an exact number. Say a guy caught 200 and he put 200. But say another guy might have happened, he caught 200 today, he caught 400 tomorrow, and for some reason the dealer throws it all in 600. Everybody maybe wasn't up on all the reporting things until you got into the VMS. So what are we going to do there?
Based on the paragraph that we added in before, NIMS would, or we would give them direction to consider putting everything at 400 pounds and at a later date if the vessel can prove that that number is not accurate, it should be something else, then that can be considered through appeals.
But actually, the trips, let's make it simple. The man had 10 trips, and he was allowed then to have 4,000 pounds, correct? For some reason, somebody gives him 10 trips, and they give him more. You're going to take his trips and put them all at 400, and if some say 200, perhaps he did have 200. What I understood what you did before was there's some inconsistency showing more than 400 pounds, which we know would be a violation, but there's probably a bookkeeping error. So to straighten that out, you were going to put everybody at 400. So if he had 10 trips, he's at 400. Is that what I'm to understand? Or would it also be if some of those trips showed 200 and some showed 600, on appeal he could say they all were 400? I mean, you're going to raise everybody to 400 pounds a trip, whether they had it or not, or what are you going to do?
Not going to raise them.
Okay, so you're going to put them at a maximum of 400. Okay. So you would know what all these people have caught, and you'd have everybody's number. I don't know if you're going by permit number or whatever, and you'd have all this information, and you'd come with it like you did when we had the limited access scallop entry. And now people, they know where they are. They're, if they don't come in, and now you're probably, let's see, it's April, so this probably wouldn't start till next March anyhow at the soonest, right? That's probably when you would start if that was the quickest you could do. That's sort of what we did with the limited access. It was voted in over here in Mystic in 93, and we started in March and May in March of 94. So people would have their readout. They would know, as Mr. Ouellette said, a lot of getting their work together. And now you'd start the appeals process. People would get their permit, and they would appeal at that time, or before we had a December date then, get the appeal in to move to another category. And if you could show there was different criteria, and if that come forward, you would move up. No matter when you do this, at some point, you've got to get all these baselines together and let people know so they can move forward. I don't see it here as so much of a percentage of the fishery problem as that you haven't really got the underpinning laid out. And on the last motion, when you talk about 10%, are you going to use 5% of the 10% just to prevent overfishing? Are you going to allocate out the 10%? Or are you going to allocate out 5 and hold 5 as a buffer? Was that decided?
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
It's 10%.
Okay, so you're going right to the maximum of 10 when you allocate it out.
No, we're off topic in the sense that we're supposed to be talking about this motion.
Right.
But the previous motion, the 10% is is a cap. It's a essentially a derby. And
okay,
when the
10%
hit, the fishery would shut down.
Well, to me, there's some bookkeeping problems here, and if you had them done on National Fisheries End, you'd get it out to the permit holders, and I think a time frame could be accomplished. I can't see what's any different here than it was in the limited access scallop fishery. I really can't. I maybe I'm missing a big point, but I can't see it.
Bob?
Thank you, Bob Keyes. Just very quickly, this is a much better alternative, I think, just simply because it takes the derby aspect out of it and would still allow people who depend on the fishery to make a living until this goes into rule. Thank you.
Ron, you got the last word from the audience.
Ron Smolowitz. How is fishing mortality going to be calculated for this measure? When and how? And then how will it be applied against the limited access fleet in Framework 19?
Anyone have an answer? Paul Howard.
I would think that if you look at the table, under existing catches, general category was 14% in 2005, 12% in 2006. So you'll have to estimate what it'll be in 2008 and 9 and take that estimation off. It could be higher than that, could be lower, but you're going to have to estimate and then set tack for the in days at sea for the limited access based on a projection of what would be caught under this.
Thank you.
Back to the council. More questions or comments to put this in as an alternative? Okay, I'm going to call the question. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Fifteen opposed. Abstentions. Motion carries 15-0. Okay, Dave.
So I think we're done with the special stuff, and we're back to the agenda, I think. Let's see where we are.
We left off at the fourth bullet under limited entry. Should measures to reduce incentives to use trawl gear be included for limited entry qualifiers?
Right, right.
Just to paint a picture for what's left, the committee, to give you an idea of how far they got, they dealt with this bullet, the next bullet, and decision 3, 4, and 5, and that's essentially how far the committee got in terms of giving you preferred options for the rest of the decisions before you.
Am I correct? Then we have 10 more items to discuss. 10 more that have been identified. There could be others that may come up.
That is correct. Some easier than others.
All right. All right. Go to hit the next one. We have a motion for the next one.
The next one we had a motion for, like taking them in order, was the trawl gear, the sector and harvesting cooperatives. We did not have a motion. That brings us, by my notes, to the Northern Gulf of Maine management alternative, which we did have a recommendation for, and that was, or a motion for, and that was to identify 3.1.4.3, establish a limited entry program for the Northern Gulf of Maine, option A, north of 42 degrees, 20 minutes. That's the preferred alternative.
Discussion on the preferred alternative from the committee. Anyone in the audience? Back to the council. Well, David.
Just have a question regarding the document itself, in his description of the reasons why those two lines were picked. In going through the document, I didn't see some good rationale as to why those specific lines were offered up as options. I know this is old business, but we're going out to public hearing now. Therefore, we need to make sure there's something in the document that makes it clear why those particular lines of latitude were chosen. So perhaps I'm just not seeing it, and you can refer me to the part of the document where that description and rationale is provided, Deidre.
I can give you a little bit. I don't know if Terry will want to jump in because he's handled a lot of this at the committee level. But in general, there was some discussion. This started out at the advisory panel level, and at first people felt that, you know, if this is going to be a separate program, it would make sense to keep the line as far north as possible to not affect potential qualifiers in other areas. And so 43 North was kind of based on an idea of where the resource has been. It's a different component of the fishery and so forth. The boundary south of that is closer, is exactly actually the stock boundary and what's used in the assessment. And it was also put forth as an option because it does include coastal areas from other states that could also, and other vessels from, I guess, even further southern states, that it would be more attractive, not just for coastal Maine, for example. So the two options were put forward. There was also discussion about even other lines as well. But in the end, these were the two that were put forward. The committee ended up going with the boundary further to the south. Primarily, you can see from the discussion at the committee meeting, that was in an effort to keep this option available to more than just basically the state of Maine waters.
I'm sorry, the recommendation of the committee was to go with which line?
Option A, which is the more southern 4220. So it would include waters along coastal New Hampshire and Massachusetts, part of Massachusetts as well. If you look on the figure on page 38 of the DSEIS, it shows what those boundary options are in a figure.
Okay, I apologize. I thought that the committee had gone with the other line as a preferred. Okay, thank you.
Anyone else on the council? Pat Kirkle.
I think everybody knows that the agency's struggling with this one. The majority of the landings in the Gulf of Maine are from state waters. Of those landings that are from federal waters, much of those areas are now closed for other reasons. The number of vessels that qualify under any of the alternatives is really sufficient to harvest that portion in federal waters that would remain, especially under the preferred alternative as it stands, which has fairly liberal qualification criteria. One of the justifications put forward for this is that there's no survey that's been done on this component of the resource, and then therefore it makes sense to break it out. Well, there's no survey for the southern New England portion either, and yet the decision was made not to treat that area differently because it would be inappropriate. If access and fishing mortality need to be controlled, then I'm not following what the justification is for an exemption in that portion of the resource that we know the least about. The PDT has talked about how attack would be set for this area, and it would be based primarily on historical landings. And yet, state, as I pointed out, the historical landings were probably in areas that might be closed now. The remainder is, for the most part, in state waters, and those state fisheries would most likely, I imagine, continue to happen. There was some recommendation from the PDT to count state landings towards whatever TAC is established, but of course, if you look at Maine, where the majority of them come from, there is no requirement to report landings. I could go on. I'm still undecided, obviously. But I think one of the rationales for this is that it's based on the fact that there's been sporadic abundance over time. Well, there's been sporadic abundance because it's been overfished consistently. And I think the proposal basically recommends perpetuating that. So I'll stop there.
Anyone else? Terry.
I have to rise to your bait, Pat. As you suspect, I have a slightly different perspective on this. We're looking at the general category fishery as a combination of directed and supplemental fishery. This northern Gulf of Maine fishery for the states of Massachusetts, New Hampshire, and Maine has been a historical supplemental fishery for a number of years. We have not been blessed with recruitment and settlement the last number of years, and the redistribution of effort is been good for the folks to the southern, but it hasn't worked well for our folks. What we're attempting to do here is to recognize the uniqueness of this area, the difference of the area through the separation of the stock assessment, and to cap the fishery in there. We're proposing a limited number of vessels. It may be more vessels than there are in other areas of the coast. But it's capped. There's a TAC proposed. There's a separate set of management options in there that will still allow for a supplemental fishery in the northern Gulf of Maine in the future.
Anyone else on the council? Okay. I'm going to call the question. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Eleven. Opposed. Four. Abstentions? One abstention. The motion carries 11-4 with one abstention. Chairman Simpson.
Okay.
They're getting easier, Dave.
Yeah, yeah. It's the hour. We should start meetings at 3. Okay, monitoring provisions. We had no recommendations. Limited entry. Fishing under the general category. We do have a recommendation, and that motion was to identify 3.1.6.1.2 permit limited entry vessels that qualify to fish under general category rules. To fish under general category rules. Yeah.
That was a committee motion, so no second required. Discussion on the committee recommendation. Anyone in the audience? Back to the council. I'm going to call the question. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Thirteen. Opposed. Two. Abstentions. Motion carries 13-2. D.
I just want to point this out to make sure people are catching up, because this was an important difference that the committee discussed at this last meeting that the council hasn't had the opportunity to see just yet. The motion you just approved does have the first part that Dave described, but if you look at the decision document on page 12, it's a kind of a combined motion. When you think about vessels qualifying under limited access vessels qualifying as well, there's also an alternative in the document that talks about where should those landings be removed from. This motion includes both of those together, and I just want to make sure people understand that there is an alternative in the document that would remove those landings from the general category portion of the TAC, but there is an alternative that was identified as preferred that would have a different TAC for just these limited access vessels that qualify under general category. And it has been assumed during this process that this is a very small amount, around 0.5%. When we actually were able to finally finalize the data to a form that the PDT was comfortable with, we learned that historical landings have actually been at a higher level than this. So the committee had a very long discussion about that and what would be the appropriate number to consider in a motion, in an alternative, excuse me. And rather than it being based on historical effort, the committee is putting forward a flat value of 0.5%. So I just wanted to make sure that was very clear, because that is something that was new from the committee level in March.
Pat Kirkle.
I didn't understand that this motion included the part about the 0.5%, and I'm not sure I got an answer to my question earlier about whether this is additive or whether the expectation is it'll be tracked separately. I'm assuming it's additive to the 5% and will be tracked together with the 5%, which, you know, we can administer. Tracking the 0.5%, on the other hand, would be very, very difficult to administer.
Dave.
Yeah, I had just broken it out for convenience and had it as a separate motion, but I think Deirdre got the point out that the committee recommendation was to allocate the allocation of quota to the limited access vessels fishing under the general category would be deducted from a separate allocation of 0.5% of the total TAC or total, you know, expected harvest, whatever you want to call it, when fishing under the general category. So it is a separate accounting system. It's not taken from the 5%, or it's not taken from the other general category. They're their own category.
Let me ask this. I'm getting the sense that people weren't aware that this second part was in the motion. They thought they were just voting on. Dave?
Yeah, I was just going to present it as two motions,
right,
thinking it was be more expedient, but.
Well, let me suggest then that we reaffirm or take a revote on this with the addition of the second part. Unless there's objection, I'll just call the question again with the inclusion of this 0.5%, because I don't think it was clear to the council that it was, in fact, two issues melded into one motion. Unless there's objection. John Nelson? No?
Objection, Mr. Chairman. I think we just need to have a clarification again, though. I heard Pat saying that the service would not track a 0.5%, which I think probably makes some sense. But I think I heard the committee saying that they were setting it aside as a separate entity to track, and so there may be a problem here. And just again for clarification, is that it's in addition to a 5% off the top already, so it would be 5.5%. And I think that's what, if I'm correct, that's what Pat was saying, that they'll track 5.5% rather than a 0.5 separately. So if it's 5.5 and they're just tracking once, I think we just want to make sure we're clear on that. Or does the committee really want to have it as a 0.5 category being tracked?
Well, I think the intent of the committee, if you go through the document, was that it would be a separate allocation in addition to the 5% that you identified for the general category.
That's right.
And I think the services comments are, you know, valuable and fair, but it didn't stop the council from just approving the Gulf of Maine exemption area as a preferred alternative after a litany of reasons why it's troublesome. So I don't think that should stop us from identifying it as a preferred, unless there's strong feelings at the council that we don't want to send that signal out. Okay. Pat?
I'm sorry, but I'm confused. Is this a hard tack? I guess I'm not understanding. They would qualify, and then how do they get an allocation of trips? Or maybe I misunderstood.
It's intended to be set up exactly as whatever is adopted for the general category permit. So if, let's just pretend we're going to assume that all the decisions we've made today are going to be the final ones, and you end up having 5% for the limited entry general category permits, and you're going to have qualifiers on an individual basis getting a number of trips based on their contribution to that overall amount. This would be set up exactly the same way, except you would limit it to only limited access vessels that qualify under the same criteria. And they would be in this different section, and then half a percentage of the total projected scallop catch would be then divided between them and how in trips and how they have participated in their contribution. So in terms of a monitoring, that's been my confusion of why it's harder to monitor, because really it's the same thing on an individual basis, so it should be the same issues.
Yeah, I think, given that, I think you're right that there's no need for any in-season monitoring. And so that's fine. Thanks.
Anyone else on the council? Okay, just for clarity of record's sake, I think I'm just going to ask that we re-vote on this because it is a little bit more broad than when we originally voted. So all those in favor, please raise your hand. Opposed? 1, 2. Motion carries 14-2. Abstentions? And one abstention. 14-2-1. Motion carries. Dave?
Okay, I think that brings us to the end of things that we had recommendations on. The next one on the list was allocation of the yellowtail flounder. We didn't have a recommendation there. The one after that is the incidental catch limit of 40 pounds, which is the one we talked about revisiting from this morning. So what to do with 40-pound trips.
Okay, so I'm looking at the one pager that Dee put together that lists out the different decisions. We didn't address the trawl gear issue and qualifiers having the ability to
John, I just want to interrupt. Sentence. You have the privilege of getting a copy of that as well as Dave, but no one else has that.
Oh. it's good to be the chair.
It's a cheat sheet of how much we have left to do.
Okay.
But you can use the decision document as well to go along with him.
I'm privileged. Okay. All right. So we've covered all the motions the committee has grappled with and will offer to us.
All the ones that we've made recommendations for preferred alternatives.
Okay. Okay, why don't we go back through and the issues that we didn't tackle at the committee, let's keep going. Unless people don't want to identify any other preferred alternatives for any other issues.
Yeah, I think maybe the place to start would be Decision 7. I know it's a little bit out of order, but it is something that, was, we'll say, unclear this morning what it meant. And I think the understanding is that all of those catches fall under a requirement for a general category permit. So to sell scallops, you will need a general category or a limited access, but you will need a permit. My understanding is you could continue to retain 40 pounds in other trips, say it's bycatch in a groundfish fishery without a general category permit, but you could not sell them. That's my understanding.
I think part of the issue, I think, that I heard from the service was we have to be able to track that or at least account for that mortality, right? Under the new act, you're going to have to find a way to make an assumption as to what this bycatch would be.
Well, if there's a permit, we can track it, but you need to decide where it'll come from.
Okay. So we need to decide if we're going to establish a permit for this bycatch, this 40 pounds or less, and what the reporting requirement will be if we're not going to allow people to sell it and it's for personal consumption, then we're still going to need to have a mechanism of a requirement to report. And then we need to figure out from where that aggregate landings of bycatch comes from.
Yeah, that's I think part of the question is one way to deal with it would be to create another permit, sort of a third category permit. So you have limited access, 400 pound limit, and then 40 pound limit. There'd be this other category, and you could sell that catch. My understanding is that if we don't do that, then there's the general category permit that allows you to sell up to 400 pounds. But absent that permit, the groundfish boat going out, the fluke boat going out that runs into 20 pounds of scallops, they could keep them, but they could not sell them.
Okay, so we've tackled this once before today. Does anyone have a motion that they're prepared to offer up on this issue? Dave Gaethel.
Yeah, well, then I'd offer a motion that would say that there be a third category of permit created that allows you, if you don't qualify for a limited access general category scallop permit, to retain and sell 40 pounds of scallops per day.
Seconded by John Nelson. Discussion? Paul Howard?
Dee, are we going to be able to put a whole new section and analyze in the document a new permit? And the allocation, I guess, would, you know, you'd have to assume a catch that would come off the top. I mean, are we going to be able to do all this and get it out of the office on Friday? Or is this something we should be able to do in a further action and just say that we expect there'll be some incidental catch, we'll estimate that catch when we determine tax, and we'll address it when we have more time in the next amendment. But to do a whole new permitting category right now, which this says...
I don't see the analysis being any different. But it's just saying you have to be permitted to be in that category. You're describing a category without a permit, which actually makes it, I think, less easy to identify and analyze. If you go with just incidental catch with no permit, no accountability, I mean, no reporting, and right, it just... Well, I mean, if that's the will of the council, policy-wise, I think it'd be better to put it in the document to the extent that you can, you know, analyze it. I mean, I understand that it's not going to be a full-blown analysis, but at least it gets it out there for comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this anticipates trying to, I mean, while it says a new permit, it would be a new permit under the new rules, but it's basically trying to mimic the 1B permit that exists now, that the vessel can land scallops while on a trip that doesn't require the VMS, so it would be basically ground fish bycatch, and that they could sell them. So I think it's there is a category of permits that you have right now to do this, but under the new rule, you would have to have a permit would be required. Thanks.
Pat, and then.
Just a correction. I think this should read 40 pounds per trip.
You're correct. That's what it is now, 40 pounds per trip.
Dave Simpson.
And just wanted to clarify that this is essentially a remaining open access fishery. There are no qualification criteria to land 40 pounds per trip. Anyone could do it.
Are you asking me or?
Yeah, really for clarification, just so people understand that we would.
Yeah, it's open access. Yeah, it's open access right now. I mean, anybody can go get one of them. It says what non-VMS 1B or something. Yeah, that would still continue to exist.
Okay, so you wouldn't new entrants could come in under this category. You're saying, as opposed to just those that didn't qualify under the landings criteria. This is a totally open access permit, then.
I'm not hung up one way or the other, Gene. I mean, I think how it probably should be is that it cuts off on date of implementation and it does close. That's how I would wish it would be. But as I understand the rules right now, this is an open access category that anybody can apply for at any time.
To that. Well, I mean, you're not limited to making a motion. I mean, I thought the way you had proposed it this morning was that any vessel that may have qualified under the permit requirement, that they had a permit between in the qualifying years up to 2004, but didn't qualify under the landings criteria, could then get this third incidental catch permit. But I mean, it's up to you to decide how you want to do your motion. I think that clarification is important, though. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, okay. And I guess I actually prefer it to be the way you described it. I thought I was constrained by the fact that this was an open access thing to not be able to put that language in it. But if that language can go in it and that's not a problem, then that would be how I would prefer to have it.
Do you want to work on the language change while I take another comment? Paul?
Just remember the big question we had this morning was, where does this, an allocation to this fishery, open access 40 pounds, where does that come from? So, you know, that probably should be the next motion or say, and it's got to probably come off the top, or you give it a separate allocation. But I don't know how you're going to do it. And that's another problem with trying to do this all today, as opposed to saying we have a category. Let's just estimate that it's going to be 0.5%, and we'll address these issues of permitting and all this in 2 years when we do the next amendment for ACLs and everything. But the other thing is, as you get into this permitting, if in fact this is an open access permit, which we don't know yet, can a general category permit also have this permit so that when he's done catching 400 pounds a day, he can go out and get 40 pounds a day, $2,000 a week? I'd do it. So if it's open access, the next question is, what we did with limited access is allow them to have general category. Can general category have an open access 40-pound thing?
I understand that the maker's working on a perfection. Any other comments? John Nelson?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. This is to Paul's comments. Why aren't we we're projecting when tax are going to be reached, and you know we're saying that we're sending out a notice, or why wouldn't the service be sending out a notice saying that the that fishery is going to close, and incidental catch is all that is allowed after that period of time. If somebody has a general access category, why then wouldn't they then just be allowed the incidental catch of 40 pounds, which a portion has come off the top of the tack to cover that? And they don't need to get another permit. They have their general category permit, but at that point they are limited only to the 40 pounds. So I don't see why they need that extra permit, and that's what I guess I'm a little confused on. And then, again, I want to just check and make sure what Dave's got as far as the language is what I had in mind, because what Gene had described was what I thought we were addressing. So okay. Let me just ask to address the first part of what Paul had raised and why I'm confused on why he's raising that.
Pat?
Well, first off, of course, the preferred alternative doesn't include a hard tax, so we're not monitoring and closing. But this is to address people who don't qualify for a general category permit, not people who do. So I believe that if this passed, there'd be the general category permit holders. When they used up their trips, they would be able to fish under the 40-pound limit. And then if this passed, vessels that didn't qualify for the general category permit would also be able to fish under the 40-pound limit. And limited access vessels, of course, that qualify for general category can also fish under the 40-pound limit. So there's all three permits at some point in the year would be authorized to fish under the 40-pound.
D.
I just had a question aside from definitely getting my threshold of not being able to get all of this wrapped up by Friday. But one thing about this one, trying to think through, if you're a vessel and you qualify for whatever criteria is selected as a general category permit, but you end up qualifying at a lower level, you're kind of at the threshold. So you qualify at a lower level, you get a smaller allocation. There could be a vessel very similar to you that just misses it. Let's say they landed 990 pounds, not 1,000, so they missed it. So they're instead going to qualify for this permit. So they could potentially land 40 pounds every time that they go out, and even, I guess, perhaps if it made economic sense to them, 40 pounds, not even really fishing for other things. So potentially their landings under this third category permit could exceed what that other vessel who qualified under the regular criteria would be allocated, right? So these wouldn't be restricted by any sort of total effort or anything like that, whereas that would be definitely a new strategy that's not in the document at this point. And, yes, while it's only 40 pounds and there may not be big mortality concerns in terms of shifting potential incentives and effort among fisheries and stuff, we would certainly have to look at that.
This is an attempt to recognize what exists right now. You have 1,400 and something groundfish permits, and I would bet that, you know, somewhere on the order of 1,100 of them aren't going to qualify for this, for any of these higher permits. And yet they all, those permits all catch scallops, some amount of scallops. The reason they're all in this 1B now is they didn't want to get a VMS at the time. But you're also going to have boats that are going to be going backwards. You know, people that don't qualify under the 1,000 pounds, like you said, but, you know, are still catching scallops. And if we don't create this kind of a permit, they're going to be discarding everything they catch. Yeah. This is just an attempt, as I see it, to I don't think anybody ever realized when people kept saying incidental catch permit, they thought they were talking about this permit. They didn't realize they were talking about a permit that you couldn't sell the scallops. I like to eat scallops, but I don't want to eat 40 pounds a day. But I catch, you know, I catch that sometimes. And so I think that, you know, this is necessary in order to, you know, just keep from converting landings to discards. That's the simplest way to put it.
Who else on the council? Otherwise, I'm going to go to the audience. Maggie and then Jeff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Unfortunately, I think the whole issue of incidental catch has not been very well addressed in this amendment as a whole. This may be one way to solve a problem of incidental catch that takes place in as part of another limited access fishery like groundfish. That's the example that's been, you know, given so far. But we're talking two things. One is we are talking incidental catch, so this shouldn't be an open access permit where someone could go out and direct at 40 pounds. It would seem to me this would have to be linked with some other fishery. So it is truly an incidental catch. So 40 pounds, you know, that may work for a lot of people, but I think what has been left out of this discussion is that there are some boats that have participated, not just groundfish boats, but I'm going to use groundfish as an example because it's what I know best. Fish on George's Bank, some trips they get 50 pounds, scallops, 60, 70, 120. They may qualify for this new limited access permit. Based on if it's a, say, for example, if you do go with the 1,000-pound qualification criteria, but then how do they utilize it? How do they continue to be able to retain and sell that 100, 120, 150 pounds that they catch over a 10-day trip? If they qualify the permit, aren't they going to have to declare that they're on a scallop trip? using up one of their allocations of scallop trips, but they're not really on a scallop trip. They're on a groundfish trip. So I don't think that whole issue has been addressed. First of all, they catch more than 40 pounds on a trip. But so maybe this would, you know, if they, but they will, some of them will qualify at 1,000 pounds. So I'm still trying to figure out how do they use that permit then once they qualify for it. And that's, you know, that's a, I mean, it's an important issue. They have, those boats have, those landings have contributed over the years to the general category landings. They're, it's a legitimate bycatch. We, you know, they would assume that they would, it's a very minimal amount of scallops. They would like to continue to retain them. But I don't see how they're addressed under this, and any of these incidental catch options. So this would be one way, but it says for people who don't qualify. But what do you do about the people who would qualify if the qualification criteria is 1,000 pounds? If, you know, they may not need a general limited access general category scallop permit. So, you know, you'd be qualifying them because they landed the 1,000 pounds, but then they wouldn't really be able to use it. What they really need is to be able to land the incidental catch that they've been landing over time. And, again, that just hasn't been addressed at all, and I'm hoping that we can figure out a way to do it.
Paul. I have Maggie a question from the chair. Now, if it was, instead of in trips, you qualify for a permit, and the preferred alternative is to assign trips. But if it was to assign poundage, then the groundfish fleet would be okay. Is that correct?
Okay. They should be able to use it how they want, 40 pounds, 45 pounds per trip, whatever.
Jeff.
Thank you. My name is Jeff Pike. I didn't intend to speak on this, but it seems like it's getting a lot more complicated than what was intended. As I understand it, the issue here is a legitimate bycatch of scallops in another fishery, and you're not trying to create a 40-pound day boat fishery. So you could simply say that a 40-pound possession limit applies to all federally permitted fishing vessels, and they may land up to 40 pounds of scallop meats per trip, except for those general category scallop vessels and limited access scallop vessels. So basically you're telling everybody else you got 40 pounds per trip. And if you have to kick some over the side, well, you have to kick some over the side. The draggers kick lobsters over the side. Our hook fishermen throw good codfish over the side when they're fishing in the shared area. So it's not like we can all keep whatever we get. So if you're trying to address the historical, legitimate, you know, bycatch, incidental 40 pounds, and just say everybody else can keep 40 pounds per trip, and by the way, you got to report it when you report your landings, whether it's groundfish or whatever. Thank you.
Anyone else? Yes, sir, in the blue sweatshirt.
Good afternoon, Paul Lane. As a scallop, being in the scallop industry, we're not allowed to land a codfish, either own consumption or anything else. I don't see the need why they need 40 pounds of scallops either. I mean, let's get all on the same playing field. If I can't land fish, I don't understand why you want scallops.
Jim Kendall.
Jim Kendall, New Bedford Seafood Consulting. Well, I can't believe we're here again. This is somewhat reminiscent of when we started discussing bycatch aboard a scalloper, and we started trying to convert it into pounds of fillets, X amount of pounds of fish would convert into fillets. I mean, we're wasting an awful lot of valuable time and effort. There's got to be a simpler way to do this. But if you're going to insist on doing it this way, my question would be is, How do you prevent more than one landing per day then? You know, this goes on and on and on. And if somebody's going to try and beat this system, they're going to beat it. I think that Jeff Pike offered you a pretty simple way of going about this if we have to go about it. But like I say, I think it's a waste of valuable time.
Tom.
Tom Swim, New London Seafood. What you have on the board is perfectly okay, but I know in some other bycatch measures, if you added a percentage, if that up there was not to exceed 5 or 10% of the total catch on board, then you wouldn't be able to make two trips a day, and you wouldn't be able to go out and just fish for 40 pounds of scallops at any one time. This actually, by Magnuson-Stevenson criteria there, is required because for 35 years we've had a bycatch of these scallops. The other thing is we would actually, unless you do something like that, you would just be changing bycatch to discards. So I think you should have a slight addition there, and then off we go. Thank you.
Okay, back to the council. The motion on the board. Any questions, comments? Sally.
Yeah, we touched on this a little bit. I'm just curious, where is this going to be deducted from? The overall annual catch limit or some other portion? Where is it coming from?
To the maker?
Yeah, I would say from the overall TAC, but I'd ask the service in light of their previous comments about not being able to monitor 0.5%. You know, I don't think this even approaches 1%. I think it's below 0.5. So, you know, is it an issue?
My concern was in-season monitoring, not necessarily after the fact.
Okay, now I'm confused.
I didn't think we could do real-time monitoring on that small attack, but I don't think this would require, I mean, deducting it at some point or taking account of it at some point wouldn't require real-time monitoring.
Okay, so what you're saying is it isn't an issue.
Anyone else? Okay, I'm going to call the question for all those in favor of including this in the document. Danny, did you have a question? You're getting your hand up there? Okay. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Ten. Opposed? One, two, three, four, five, six. Motion carries 10-6. Any abstentions? One abstention. Okay, Dave, it's almost 5 o'clock. Are there other, between you and Dee, are there other items that are on our list of decisions to make that need a fleshing out or aren't clear that we would benefit from having preferred alternatives in the document for the public?
I'd like to answer that, but before we move on, unless another motion's made, it's not completely clear to me what I'm supposed to do about these landings. If a motion's going to be made or not, I didn't want to jump the gun, but in terms of figuring out where it's coming from and about how much it should be, that type of thing.
Paul.
Yeah, again, that was the issue that we had. We've got to make an assumption of what this group will catch and take it off the top. That's what we voted on before, but it isn't clear whether you're going to do that with that motion. But the PDT has to make an assumption of how much will be caught under the 40% and probably take it right off the top before you assign the general category and you assign the limited access.
You need a motion. Dave Simpson.
Yeah, if it helps to have a motion to that effect, I would move that the PDT develop an estimate of landings expected from this category and take that off the top of the overall allocation and then distribute access to the other fisheries.
Okay. You're probably going to have to restate that for Karen.
Yeah, that the PDT develop an estimate of landings expected from this fishery, from this incidental catch fishery.
I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. All right, let's see. That the PDT develop an estimate of landings expected from this bycatch fishery, this incidental catch fishery. Yeah. And that estimate be taken off the top before distributing allocations to the limited access and general category fisheries.
Jim Salisbury is the seconder. Take a look at the language, Dave, to make sure it captures what you said.
Taken off the top before allocation to the limited access and general category fisheries. Does that work?
Yes, my only question is, so is this PDT expected estimate something we would do in future frameworks and it would have understood to adjust, or is this something, some sort of level that should be in Amendment 11, you know, before it goes out for public hearing and so forth?
Yeah, my understanding of the current way it's done between limited access and general category is the PDT makes an estimate based on recent experience and of what the general category landings will be, and then they allocate access to the limited access fleet, right? So that's, I would expect them to do the same thing. So the estimate would be somewhere less than 1%, presumably. That would be taken off the top, and then the allocations would be done. But I couldn't give you an explicit estimate now. I think the PDT would have to do that each year.
But to be clear, so it's still going to remain as an estimate and not be an actual hard tack that would close or anything like that?
Paul Howard.
Getting back to the issues of permitting. Now, we don't expect that limited access scallop vessels can have this permit, nor can vessels with general category permits have this permit, because, again, then you're looking at having to the PDT to determine catch of everyone on every permit, and assuming that they're going to also have this permit as well for incidental catch. So I don't know what we're doing here yet, so...
Pat.
Well, I think Paul's right that when we started this discussion many hours ago, this actually had to do with the general category landings after, in the case of the preferred alternative, after their trips, they'd taken their trips and they were authorized to land up to the 40 pounds. We've also voted, I think, as a preferred alternative that the limited access category be allowed to do that. So it's not just this new permit. It's being able to account for anyone that's fishing under the 40-pound or less trip limit. And I don't think it's an analysis that has to be in Amendment 11. It's guidance on what the accounting method should be in the future when you're looking at fishing mortality and developing management measures based on the fishing mortality by the different sectors.
Thanks, Pat. Anyone else in the council? Okay, to put, we're voting to put this in. Rodney.
Yeah, I'm glad our executive director says he don't know where we're going, because I don't know either. let me get this right. We just set out percentages. We got 5% off of the total allowable for the general category. Now we're creating a new category, permit category here, and we're going back and taking it off of the limited access. It's not off of everybody. So it, to me, it's almost like it's everybody? Okay. All right.
Okay. I'm going to call the question. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries 15-0, one abstention.
Okay, the only other, you know, I don't know how long you want to go before you do the other thing, but the one thing we can't forget to do is address Framework 20. So if you'd like a motion to that effect.
Framework 20.
I'm sorry?
Framework 20.
What did I say?
Right, that's what you said.
Framework 20.
I'd forgotten all about Framework 20.
Okay.
To be honest with you.
5 o'clock. I don't even know what came out of my mouth.
That's
but
why
I meant
I'm smiling
Framework
and just
20.
Nodding. Okay, before we close out discussion on Amendment 11, I wanted to check with the council to see if there are other issues that council members feel strongly about that they want to identify or make a motion to identify a preferred alternative. Otherwise, the document will just stand as having some of the issues identified as preferred alternatives. And I think we've attacked, or attacked is probably the wrong word, but we've identified on the meaty issues, some of them anyways, the preferred alternatives that we're going to send out to the public for public comment. Just checking with you on the council. Dave Gaethel.
So just a procedural question, and the sections that we have not made a recommendation on will go as just no preferred alternative, or how will it be?
Correct.
Moved?
Correct. Okay. All the options, as every other alternative, all the options are available, and some of them just won't have a preferred.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. D.
Very resistant here, but the only motion you haven't considered from the SCALP committee is under the potentially new alternatives, which was motion 13 related to a potential new alternative to be added to Amendment 11, and then there are several other bullets on the following page that have been raised from different levels. We've gone through some of them, but those would be my last few reminders. Don't necessarily have to be added into Amendment 11. One is directly from the committee to consider, and several others have been listed in the letters of correspondence.
So there was no, in order for Motion 13 to make it into the document, the council is going to have to act on that. Then with respect to all the other items that are on the back page, again, the council would have to act on that to include it in the document. Does anyone on the council wish to make a motion to take action on these issues, to include them in Amendment 11? Dana Rice?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I would make a motion that we include the issues we preferred and the other issues to be included in the document for the council.
Danny, could you pull it a little closer? I couldn't hear you.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I make that motion.
What do you want to include in Amendment 11?
The issues that we lost my train of thought here. The preferred options and the issues.
Okay.
Somebody help me with a word in here. I'm a little bit stuck.
Well, we have that
motion 13. Motion 13, Mr. Chairman.
From the SCALP committee.
Yes, from the SCALP committee. Sorry, I wasn't prepared. I was just in a hurry to make a motion so we could get moving.
Actually, that was a committee motion, wasn't it? So it doesn't require a second.
No.
It's on the board. Discussion on the motion on the board. Paul Howard.
If the analysis is complete and available, does that leave it up to Dee that if she can't get it done and submit it on Friday, that it doesn't go forward? So she does the best she can. If it can't get in there, it's okay.
Sally McGee.
I think this issue is most appropriately dealt with by the Habitat Committee, and we haven't met and discussed this issue. Obviously, we're working on the omnibus habitat amendment when all the habitat closed areas are being considered, and I would say that's the appropriate forum to discuss this. And since the Habitat Committee isn't going to be able to meet between now and Wednesday to make a recommendation, I would say that this is not an appropriate motion. Thank you.
Pat Kirkle.
Yeah, I've discussed this with my staff, and they advised me that there's no possible way that Dee could get it done by Friday. I mean, just in fairness to her, it's just not possible.
Anyone else on the council? Dave Gaethel.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to suggest that you rule this motion out of order because I don't think all the people that have to work on this, and it's more than just the people who have been listed so far, can possibly do it, and therefore it'll be incomplete by nature.
Well, the motion itself refers to the ability of staff to complete the necessary work by Friday, and I don't believe that they can do it. However, the motion did come from the committee, and it did contemplate that or put that caveat into the motion. So I'm going to call the question, and I hope that the council does the right thing and does not put this motion forward. John Nelson.
Yeah, well, we could ask Dee if she could do it, and I was going to ask that, and I think we've got the answer. Maybe a nod from her would be a good thing, and then we could vote. Otherwise, we could move the table, Mr. Chairman. I don't want to have multiple votes here, but if it would help, I'll move to table that motion.
Is there a second? Seconded by Tom Hill. All those in favor of tabling the motion, please raise your hand. Fourteen. Opposed. Abstentions. Motion carries. Okay, I've got hands going up all over the place. Dee?
I was kind of waiting to just see if it would end up voting, and I wouldn't have to comment. Aside from just being able to do this by Friday, there are a lot of other issues people have brought up. I just wanted to ask a question about this, though. Tabled till when? I mean, what are we talking about? Something to be addressed in a later amendment? Or
it's indefinite.
Till Thursday? Until
not,
tomorrow? I'm not going to be here tomorrow.
You're not going to get a phone call on Friday morning telling you that you need to. Okay, L.A.?
Out of energy. Leslie Ann's here to back me up.
I'm going to save my comrade in arms here. That was my question. I assume you mean tabled until the UFH omnibus amendment, because that's the intent of the amendment. So
it's indefinitely tabled.
Good.
Anything else that the council wants to bring up for Amendment 11? Dave, your hand's up.
Yeah, just as Deirdre said, because it's getting late and I'm forgetting things. On page 16, there were those three items that I just want to, you know, again, bring to people's attention and see if anyone wants to make a motion. It was, you know, if an allocation is awarded in trips, consider an allocation of 200-pound units with a maximum of 400 pounds per trip. That came up this morning, I think it was. And then consider an alternative that would allocate the same percent that's allocated to the general category fishery to carry over to the access areas. And then the third sector is for the limited access scallop fishery, which probably a big bite, too, to get done by Friday.
Council? Jim Odlin.
Just a question on the limited sectors for limited access scallop fisheries. And the omnibus sector omnibus amendment could take care of that, is my understanding, right?
Well, it certainly could address the issue of sectors in the scallop fishery. People will point out, and rightfully so, that in the terms of reference to the sector omnibus that the council approved and gave to the committee, the intent of the sector omnibus was not to slow down the development of sectors and other fisheries. Rather, it was designed to come up with the set of broad standards that could be applied across all FMPs. And presumably the council would then revisit any sectors that are in existence and consider whether or not the existing sectors are consistent with the standards that were created in the omnibus. Mike Leary.
I know it's getting late. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If sectors aren't frameworkable, is there any way we could at least leave a placeholder in here for if there's two sectors, a general category sector and the Garden State sector that have come forward? I mean, if they don't get in this one, when would be the next amendment that they could possibly perhaps get in?
Well, unless I'm wrong, I believe that in the document there are provisions for sectors in the general category fishery. There are not provisions for the limited access fishery in this amendment. So it would take the next action, I believe, to authorize them for limited access. Yes. Unless Gene wants to step in and tell me otherwise.
Oh, I'm just to understand, you say there's a general category sector provision in this amendment?
Yes.
That would could be put in place then regardless of what happens in the omnibus.
Yes.
So there is a partial sector provision.
There's provisions for the general category to form a sector once Amendment 11 goes through, if those provisions stay in and are ultimately approved. There is no provision for limited access to do that. Now, the question, and I believe this amendment would put sectors as a frameworkable item, right? But that would still only be for the general category section of the fleet. In other words, a limited access entity couldn't come forward in a subsequent framework and propose a sector. It would require an amendment to authorize sectors for the limited access portion of the fishery, to be clear. Unless the sector omnibus amendment comes through prior to the next scallop amendment, correct? Jim Odlin.
I guess I'm a little confused. I thought that that's what the sector omnibus amendment was going to do, was going to allow other fisheries that don't have sectors allowed in their fisheries to move forward with a sector under the criteria that's created with the omnibus and not have to go through an amendment of all the other plans. Am I misreading what we were going to do?
No, you're right. I think it's a question of timing. I think, you know, we have a proposal that's in our binder from a specific group of limited access scallop permit holders that want to form a sector. And I think it's an issue of timing for them as opposed to the other issues. Anyone else on the council? Dave Preble.
Yeah, I'm not thoroughly clear on this. I would much rather see this go forward with provision for both parts to be able to form sectors. I don't really understand why this is worded such that the general category boats will be allowed to form a sector, but the limited access boats will not. I don't like that. Can this be... what's the easiest way of changing it? Or do people want to change it? See, our intention with the Sector Allocation Committee is to not slow down the formation of sectors, as you pointed out a few minutes ago. And I don't like this to go forward with one gear type cut out of the authorization to form sectors. I'm not sure where to go with this.
Well, this amendment was designed to address the general category portion of the fleet. My understanding is that the issues of sectors and permit stacking and all the other consolidation and efficiency-seeking tools that exist out there that are currently not available to the limited access fleet, that's a much broader issue that people have spoken out against in terms of putting it into this document. There's an equally vocal contingency of the limited access fleet that feels that the council should put that in this document at this time so that it can signal to them that it's time to develop a plan and move forward in the next action for a sector. So we've dealt with this at the council through this amendment, I think several committee meetings, which have, I believe, looked favorably on inclusion, but when it's gotten to the council level, we've had these discussions, and the council at large has not chosen to include it.
Okay.
Phil Rule.
I don't know if I disagree with you, Mr. Chairman. My recollection might be wrong, but I think when we dealt with it last time, we were still forming hadn't formed the sector on the bus committee. So when this came up on the table, we hadn't got to the position of having that discussion prior to that. Mm-hmm. So I understand where Dave's coming from, and I'm a little troubled with it myself. That I think Mike's question is valid, becomes valid. If we don't put it in this, the next amendment to scallops would be
January 1st, 2008. We're going to start right away with an amendment for ACL's name.
Paul?
We're going to start an amendment right away after our framework. Most likely the council will vote in October to start amendment for scallops January 1st, 2008, because we have to put in annual catch limits and accountability measures, address sectors, all kinds of things we'll have to do to meet the new Magnuson Act.
Anyone else on the council?
If I could, John.
Phil?
Just for clarity, it's like, clears me up. That helps considerably, Paul, because I was sort of aware of that, but I wasn't 100% sure it was. We were starting that on the first. So if my understanding is right, it could be included in that, or it could come under the umbrella of the omnibus, whichever one comes through the gate first. Thank you.
Anyone else on the council? Anyone in the audience? Jeff.
Thank you, and I'll be brief. I did intend to speak on this issue, and my name is Jeff Pike, and I'm appearing here today on behalf of 38 limited access scallop permit based in New Jersey. And our fishermen would like to form the Garden State Scallop Sector. Our goal today is to ask you for your support in including an alternative for limited access vessels in Amendment 11 so that the Council may receive comment on the proposal. We're not asking you to approve at this time or decide whether this alternative should in fact go forward or whether a particular sector should be approved. Rather, the Council can reserve judgment on that important question until it has received comments from the public. We would not ask this if we thought that the proposal that we've transmitted to you would in fact delay Amendment 11. I've had extensive conversations with the Executive Director and the Chairman of the Council, and it is our view that inclusion would not cause any delay in the planned June vote on A11. I think it's also important to note that the Scallop Committee previously voted 7-0 to include this alternative, but 6 months ago the Council did vote 8-6 to reject it. The industry was in large part responsible, I think, for that unfavorable vote because of the way the proposal was presented to the Council. There was confusion and we accept responsibility for that. The role and the functions of the sector committee was also unclear at that time. One of the driving forces behind the desire to form a sector is the management of the yellowtail bycatch and the potential loss of scallop landings due to closed area closures caused by bycatch. As you know, the yellowtail bycatch TAC in closed area 1 has been reduced in 07-08 fishing year by 60%. If the use of this TAC is not managed properly, access to that area could be quickly terminated for the entire fleet. A sector would give fishermen the tools to ensure that the TAC is not exceeded. The proposal before you today follows very closely the sector alternative for general category fishermen, which itself is built on the sector approval process contained in the groundfish plan. As with other sectors, it requires any specific proposal for a sector to be evaluated and approved by you, the council, through a framework action or amendment. It requires legally binding contracts, enforcement mechanisms, and accountability. Most importantly, however, the proposal does not allocate the scallop resource beyond the existing allocation schemes contained in Amendment 10 for days at sea and closed area trips. The proposal will treat all limited access vessels equally in terms of bycatch, and each vessel would receive, the sector would receive a portion of the 10% set aside yellowtail bycatch, represented by the percentage of the vessels in the sector. The document already contains a sector process for general category, and the limited access process ought to be in there as well. An environmental analysis of our proposal has been provided to the staff, and we believe it's a plug-and-play situation. It's written so that it can be simply inserted, and it would not require, in our view, any significant amount of staff work or delay. When or if the sector committee comes out with their guidance, like all other sectors, this process would have to be amended to conform with those directives. For example, today we have an existing sector language in the multi-species that there be a 20% cap in terms of the percent that may be held by an individual sector. The committee may, in fact, determine that's too low or too high. Existing sectors and sector processes and future sectors would have to comply with that. If we can't get this proposal included now, then when? I understand the executive director said there may be a sector amendment beginning next January, but at the earliest, under what we propose, you wouldn't see a scallop sector in the limited access fishery if everything went well until 09 or more likely 010. If we delay more, we're looking at 010, 011. And frankly, the bycatch issue is going to become an exceedingly difficult problem, and we hope and our request is that this be included so that the public can comment, that you can look at those comments and determine for yourself whether, in fact, this ought to be included in Amendment 11. Thank you.
Okay. General O'Malley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jim O'Malley. I think Jeff covered most of it, and I'll just re-stress that nobody is asking anybody to approve anything. What we're asking you to do is to not send the message to the public that you don't want to hear it by saying that it's been considered rejection. Do not bother coming forward with your opinions about sectors pro and con. And I think at this particular time, when the council is looking at real proposals in the groundfish plan for additional sectors, rumors and rumbles about sectors in such things as herring and even whiting, I'm hearing a little bit about, comments that you would get at this time about scallop sectors might very well contain information and lessons that would be very valuable to you as you look at these other sectors. And those comments would be very useful in guiding the Sector Omnibus Committee itself. But we're not asking, as has been said, for anything to be approved.
nor are we asking for it to be a preferred alternative. All we're simply saying is leave it in there as an alternative. Don't reject it. Just take the language out, considered and rejected, and make it something that you are saying to the public, what do you think about this idea? We'd like to have this information now. So by simply leaving it back in there as a non-preferred alternative and changing it from rejected would be as much as we could ask of you today, and we look forward to continuing the dialogue about sectors during the public hearing process. And we hope you will learn things that will be very useful to you and that we will learn things that will be very useful to us. Thank you very much.
Harriet? Dee? Did you want to?
Sure. While she's coming up, I won't comment on this a lot because the PDT has thought about, you know, required analyses and things like this since it's been discussed at the committee level at least. And while it was rejected at the council level, or since it was rejected at the council level, we have not spent a significant amount of time thinking about it too much, but it has come up so many times that we have, and I have started to pay a little bit more close attention to the sector committee and have learned from them that there really is a list of kind of more new issues that they have identified that I think the people working on this amendment would not feel as comfortable as the speakers have noted of just taking what has been provided by the industry and inserting it right into the document. We would want to take some time to consider and discuss some of the issues the sector committee has already identified about. There's a whole dozen of them. People involved in the sector committee know there really isn't a definition of a sector yet and so forth. So that's just some input about how easy it could be for us to get this in the document at this stage.
Harriet?
I've spoke against it before, and I'm speak about it again. The first reason, it's a way just to bypass ITQs, get away from the referendum that was just brought in, the reauthorization of Magnuson. But after listening to those two gentlemen from Washington yesterday and all the questions that they were asked about laps and sectors and all these different things that they said they really couldn't answer because the process is ongoing and they didn't really have the answers, I don't want to see it go out to public hearing because I don't want to see people asked to decide on something that they really don't know what it is. You have an omnibus committee here now that's working on it. I'm sure they're going to continue. They're going to try to, I'm sure, get any information from Gene or Washington as it comes along about sectors, present them to the council. And this was never, the interest here of limited access vessels, more or less, is what's the percentage going to be so we know what we're going to do. That's mostly why we're here. I'm here anyhow, speak for myself. And to see that if things will be put in this amendment, that they'll look to push into limited access or MIRA that may or may not be appropriate for limited access. Here today with these people, you're talking 3,000 permits. In limited access, we're talking 300. In the groundfish, I don't know how many you're talking, but you're talking a lot of permits. I want to speak against it. I don't think it's the appropriate place. It's not a limited access, really, amendment. I think it is just to bypass the other. And what's the anxiousness? If there's no anxiousness, why do they want it today? Why not wait when you start on a limited access scholar amendment? And there is no doubt it's going to take away jobs. And I'm speaking for jobs in the community. We've got very high unemployment in New Bedford, and it is going to eliminate jobs. That it's going to stop yellowtail from being caught if one skipper can do a better job as another, if there are people that can decide all these things of how much better one captain is than another, well, I'll leave that up to them. But the amount of yellowtail to catch will be there, and when it's caught, it's going to be caught. I don't see how this is going to stop it. I would certainly ask you not to do it on because this isn't limited access, because it is going to cut away jobs, and it is to undercut the referendum that's out there for ITQs. And we really don't know, as the men from headquarters said yesterday, what really all these things are as they're going to be interpreted in the new Magnuson. Thank you.
Carried. Thank you. I'm going to come back to the council. Dave Preble.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to make a motion that section 3.1.2.7.2.1.
What page is that, Dave? Do you know what page that is?
That's page 30. Be changed to allow both general category and limited access vessels to form sectors. We haven't, well, let me leave it there for now.
Is there a second? Phil Rule? Seconded by Phil Rule. So 3.1.2.7.
It's 3.1.2.7.2.1. The section on participation under sectors and harvesting cooperatives.
You'd also want to.
There should be a point one after that, too.
Rather than get too confusing, actually, the one right above that is to allow the whole process for okay. sectors, so that would be the appropriate number.
Okay. Motion's been made and seconded by Phil Rule. Discussion? Dave.
Yeah, I don't want to belabor this. I'm not going to take a lot of time at it. I just we're trying to form sectors. We allow them to be formed every place else. I just it seems wrong to me to exclude any vessel group from something that we're trying to do in general. So see what happens.
Anyone else? Paul Howard, then Rodney.
I think what you have to do is in my opinion, not just say that we're going to allow sectors, but you have an obligation to develop a blueprint. What will a sector look like so that the public knows this is the blueprint? We did a blueprint in groundfish. And so are you saying that we're going to use the same blueprint, what sectors will look like as the general category? And I think you owe it to the public and to everyone to really get into a discussion of what the general category sector looks like, and are you going to use the same that same criterion blueprint for the limited access scala? Because there's a lot of, you know, we've discussed this a lot at staff, so if you're going to go through this, you just can't say we're going to allow sectors. What is your blueprint? And you need some discussion on that.
Yeah, I'm not even thinking of it to that point. It's just the idea that we are allowing one group to be eligible to form sectors. It's not even saying that somebody will or that we would approve a sector that they come up with. But limited access vessels are eligible to form sectors. I see no reason why the general category are allowed to form sectors. I see no reason why the limited access shouldn't have the same rights to do so. That has been the will of the sector omnibus committee, is to not slow the formation of sectors while the committee is coming up with the blueprint. It's not all it's doing is allowing this to be discussed at the public hearing level, and I think it should be. I don't want to see any group excluded from consideration of sectors or four sectors.
Okay, Rodney, then Phil, then Sally, then John Nelson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not pro or against sectors, but I think this is the wrong venue. And if we allow it in here, we're going to send a message out that if you go into any committee, you can slip something in. So I think the agenda was set out. People know what they're talking about. This was supposed to be a general category access amendment. It wasn't supposed to be a limited access amendment. Right. That's the only thing. We might be sending the wrong message by allowing that in here. And we do have an omnibus committee to work on it, a sector omnibus committee.
Phil?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I seconded this motion just for the discussion principles, just so that's clear. And to me, the question jumps up, which I was trying to ask before and didn't do a very good job of it, I guess. But under the umbrella omnibus amendment, as that's being developed, what would be the timeline some kind of guess of a timeline of when the omnibus amendment itself would actually take place that covers going across the FMPs to create this. I mean, kind of like to me, that jumps in front of me as when you're looking at the timeline or what kind of timeline that you're actually looking at. So I asked maybe the chair or the chair.
I believe the working timeline for the sector omnibus committee has us taking a final vote at the council level. It's either September or November. I think it's November. And then you've got to build in the whole implementation process beyond that. So you're probably looking at something around June of next year, unless I'm wrong. I think that's the plan. Is that right, John Nelson?
I think that's roughly the time frame, Mr. Chairman, depending on how fast the the committee can move ahead with its deliberations. We might be able to do it a little bit faster, and then we could have the vote sooner. But basically, you're looking at the, I would think, the middle of next year for that to be submitted.
Well, I think it's important to note that the sector omnibus action is not going to authorize or review any specific sector proposals for any fishery. It's simply going to insert language into each FMP that then allows proposals to come forward through the normal course of plan amendments or frameworks. So to be clear, just because the omnibus were to go forward and, say, authorize sectors in the scallop fishery, that doesn't mean that anybody can approach the council at that time and submit a plan. They still have to wait for an action to be taken in that plan. And we may, out of the sector omnibus committee, an ultimate approval through the council, leave some issues that need to be decided on a fishery-by-fishery basis. In fact, I can pretty much guarantee that's what we're going to do. We're not trying to get down to the level, drill down to the level of detail fishery by fishery. We're trying to set up a higher order or template that needs to be looked at and adhered to, as well as lay out questions and parameters for discussion and decision on a fishery by fishery basis. Phil?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That helps a lot, because that's kind of like where I was wondering. I mean, the best case scenario, you're talking about the middle of next year to okay it, to start building a sector at that point. You know, for this, unless we put it in the 08, as the 08 amendment. So I'd probably have to favor this motion, I guess. Thank you.
Sally?
Yeah, like Rodney said, I have some concerns about expanding the scope of this amendment, but the fact is we need to get public comments on sectors. I mean, that's what's been sorely lacking, not in just in the scallop fishery and herring. As each different fishery and comes forward with a sector proposal, we end up getting a lot of comments along the lines that the sky is falling, and we need to get rid of the boogeymen and get down to the nuts and bolts. And I think by having some public comment in the context of the scallop fishery, we're going to get a couple of things. We'll get some clear direction on what the concerns are about formation of scallops formation of sectors in the scallop fishery. And with the limited resources that the council has, the discussion during the public hearings for this amendment will help the sector committee in its development of the sector amendment to have more public comment so that we can actually move forward with some of these proposals rather than cutting off the debate prematurely. So I'll support this motion.
John Nelson next.
I think I'll pass, Mr. Chairman.
Anyone else on the council? Dave Gaethel.
Yes, thank you. I oppose this motion only for a number of reasons. The first is I think the issues between limited access and general category sectors are two totally different things, and trying to combine them into one is not going to be easily done. As an example, I tried to do a back of the envelope calculation here when Jeff said they had 38 boats. That's got to be getting awful close to 20%. Well,
It depends on how we define capacity. Is it 9% of the numbers of boats, or is it the capacity based on the number of days they're allocated?
All right, let's keep.
Well, anyway, my point is that there's issues here that need to be addressed. I think this amendment was set up for general category issues, and we ought to keep it at that and just put this in the limited access amendment when we start it. It's not that much of a delay. And then all the limited access people can come here at the same time, and we can have a full and open debate on it. I don't think you're going to get that at the public hearings. I might be wrong, but that's my opinion anyway.
Jim Salisbury.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The amendment or the motion proposes to substitute language into 3.1.2.7.2, and I would bring you to that section, and it says, this alternative was establish a process for the creation of fishing sectors and the allocation of tax shares to the sectors. And in the limited access fishery, I don't believe you have tax shares, so this would be a major issue or a major item to deal with, and so I think it's a little premature to, in effect, establish tax shares in a fishery that doesn't have them. So I think the motion is premature at this point. Thank you.
Anyone else? Pat Kirkle.
Well, I do think that just trying to revise the language that's in there to apply both to limited access and general category is problematic and would create a fair amount of work for the staff. The other option is to take the proposed language from the Garden State scallop sector and just agree to include it for comment. And then we can decide at the next meeting what to do with it. But they have spent some time drafting effectively the limited access version of what's already in there. And if we just drop it in and don't do anything else, then we can at least get public comment on it.
John Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When Pat talks about dropping it in, is it going to be then a separate entity that is we're just trying to get public comment on this idea? So it's like an appendix, and versus being a component of this part of the document, the 3.1.2.7.2. I can see asking for public comment on a concept as an appendix. But I think for the comments that we've heard already about what this amendment is supposed to do, and quite frankly, how complex sectors probably could become, I would be somewhat reluctant to put it into this section right now. But if we put it in as an appendix and just get public comment, maybe that's a possibility.
Dave Simpson.
Three committees have looked at this public hearing document, or what we're trying to create to be a public hearing document, and none of those committees have been able to finish developing preferred alternatives. And I can just imagine what the public hearings are going to be like, trying to get through all of this and get good comments in a timely fashion. I just can't imagine adding anything else to this now. We've repeatedly said this is a general category amendment, and I think we need to just stay with that to the end here.
Okay, I'm going to call the question. To this motion on the board, all those in favor, please raise your hand. Five. Opposed? Ten. Opposed. The motion fails. 5-4. Ten against. One abstention. Anything else? John Nelson.
Well, I don't want to usurp the chair's role. But if there's nothing else, don't we need a motion to move it forward as amended and prepare for public hearing? And I'll let the chair phrase that correctly.
Yeah, I guess that is appropriate. Thanks, John. So I would move to forward this document for or move approval of this document to take out to public hearing.
As amended?
As amended.
Seconded by Jim Salisbury. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Opposed? Abstentions? Motion carries, 17 in favor. Okay. That concludes scallops, doesn't it?
Not yet.
There's more?
20. One.
Oh, yeah.
One more thing. That concludes Amendment 11 of scallops. Now, Framework 20 is a committee motion to recommend that the council initiate Framework 20 to prevent overfishing in fishing year 2007.
Was that a committee motion?
Yes.
Okay. Discussion? Is anyone against preventing overfishing in the scallop fishery? Okay. Okay. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Four. Anyone against it? Any abstentions? Okay, the motion carries. Dave, we got more, don't we?
Yeah, we'll never be done.
Really small.
Yeah, okay.
Just to make sure we do this very thoroughly. There also was a consensus statement at the committee meeting related to basically a suggestion that the council is probably going to end up ultimately just being a letter type of thing. But in the middle of page 7 in the committee meeting summary, there was a by-consensus statement from the committee. We heard some testimony that there's this movement to move research related to protected resources out of the science center, potentially to a different science center that would end up ultimately becoming some sort of mecca of protected resource type of topics. So the committee heard testimony from the public that that would potentially be a negative thing for this region because we have a nice relationship with the Science Center and the industry in terms of working on research and ecosystem-related things related to protected resources, and it would be kind of an endorsement by the council requesting that this type of ecosystem research and protected resources research remain, in fact, in the New England, the Northeast Fishery Science Center, rather than a different place. And I don't know a whole lot about the background, but this was a sentiment discussed at the committee meeting.
Is that something you feel comfortable drafting up a letter for if the council asks? Does anyone on the council object to that? Anyone else? Pat?
Well, you know, the scallop expertise right now does rest in our Southeast Center, and frankly, I think it's up to our centers to decide where research is most appropriately and efficiently done. What did I say? Turtle expertise, sorry. Turtles. They're turtle people.
Anyone want to make a motion? Bill Rule makes the motion. Is there a seconder? Dave Preble? It's a Rhode Island thing, isn't it? Okay. Dr. Pierce?
I guess I'm still uncertain as to why the committee made this motion. It suggests that there's actually a move afoot to take ecosystem research out of the Northeast Fisheries Science Center and to move it down to the Southeast Center. I thought it was just turtles. Isn't that the issue, turtle research? I know Nancy Thompson, the new Senate director, acting director, is a turtle person. I don't know whether she's intending to go back to the Southeast Center and bring that responsibility with her, but I just don't understand the nature of this particular motion. What is out there? What is indicating that there's going to be this shift in ecosystem research? I don't mind supporting the motion, but I don't know why it's being there.
Well, we could certainly write a letter and be ignored. That hasn't stopped us in the past. We've written plenty of letters and we've been ignored, but I don't know that this issue rises to such a high level that we should dedicate a lot of time to it tonight, unless I'm completely off the wall, which is possible. But any other discussion on this? Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll try to be quick. The reason I made the motion was mainly because I was involved in the turtle workshop that they held a couple months ago, and there was a lot of work partook in that ended up with a proposed rule coming out almost as fast as we got out of the door. Not quite that fast, that's an exaggeration, but it's pretty quick. But the concern that I have that jumped out at me at that was what the proposed rule comes out with is gear that was designed to work in the Gulf is being carried to work up in the Mid-Atlantic region. And it's two different areas, two different fisheries, two completely different animals altogether in a lot of respects. So I think we'd be much better off having our science center that is familiar with our fisheries and our areas have a bigger voice in the problem.
Okay, I'm going to call the question. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Nine opposed. Three opposed. Abstentions. Motion carries 9-3 to, I think it was 6 abstentions. Five abstentions. Dave, do we have more on scallops?
Deirdre, do we have more on scallops? I think we got it all. Just for supper.
Okay.
Yeah. No, that's it.
All right. We'll take a 5-minute break, and then we're going to have the council hearing on the central fish habitat. At that hearing, we're going to steamroll right over one of the agendas.